Thursday night, and it's Real Racing USA back live on the airwaves. Took a week off last week. Good to be back. You had a big weekend of racing, Jack. You went up there to the ASA race.
Why are you talking over that music, man?
You said go.
Stevie Ray wouldn't like that.
Man. Stevie Ray would get over it. He would get over it.
Yeah. I went to Bronson Motor Speedway, watched ASA racing.
Yeah?
I talked to my buddy Skip Wall on the way up there. And, of course, he was traveling across North Carolina to a race. He got rained out, though, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Skip Wall hiding in the corner with us here tonight.
Guys, how's it going down there tonight?
It's going good. How's it going with you, Skip?
Well, we're making it. We got some of the rain that I think was down here in Florida, but it came up through here, and it washed out the Wheeland Southern Modified 150 at Kinley, North Carolina, at Southern National Speedway. And, you know, we was really looking forward to that because they had such a great finish the week before at Caraway Speedway. And, you know, this thing with this Wheeland Modified series is going to be something else this year.
I'm telling you what, Skip, man, this Modified deal, I mean, I know it's been around for a long time and it's had its ups and downs, but right now it's in the upstroke.
It is, and you know, I'm going to say something about NASCAR. They
watch yourself now. Watch yourself.
Works and said that they're going to go back to their roots, and you know that's been the case this year. We saw the Tony Stewart incident earlier this year, and how the emotions and all are coming out and about. Well, it's kind of fallen down into the Wheeland Modified series. They haven't forgot their roots, and I'm going to tell you, at Caraway Speedway, they had some dignitaries there, and some of the upper echelon of NASCAR was at this race. And, you know, for the kind of race that they had, they had 33 entries, and they only took 26. So they sent some cars home, and they had another great bunch of field for this past weekend, and unfortunately the rains came. So we go back and do it again this weekend. And this week they're running the Greenville Pickens Speedway down in Greenville, South Carolina. So, really looking forward to that.
So, you're going to be there?
I'm going to try to fit it in. Got some other things going on.
Super Cup.
Anytime a Wheeling Southern Modified, I always try to kind of take that in.
No doubt. That's a race to not miss, that's for sure.
I see your boy Michael Rich did won a race without Jackaroo.
How about that, Michael Rich? You know, he shows what a little small team that can do, what a small team that they can do it without a good sponsor that they had. And
don't need no stinking hot sauce.
No hot sauce, no Jack Gruden, no Becky Cecil. No one to tell you what you can say and what you can't say. So our hats off to Michael Rich. We need to get him on the show.
Yes, we do.
You get on that, Skip. You get right on that. Maybe next week.
Didn't we have a problem with that?
That's what he was talking about.
We don't need to.
Those people who know what we're talking about know what we're talking about. If you don't know, you don't need to know, I guess, one of them things.
If you followed us on Real Racing USA with the Hooters Pro Cup when we was on that the last 2 years, everyone will know exactly what we're talking about. We talk about Jackaroo, Naturally Fresh, and Michael Rich and Becky Cecil.
Too funny.
Hey, listen, while I'm thinking of it, the Super Cup Stock Car Series, they had a little announcement over the weekend. You know, this is the series that's running the steel body cars that got outlawed.
Ain't nobody could beat a girl.
Can't nobody beat a girl. Absolutely. They had an announcement over the weekend, and I thought this was pretty good. You know, the Hooters Pro Cup, they only had like 29 entries for this past weekend's race. So they're short. They're not filling their field up with the series this year. It is some of it's because the independent drivers are going over this new Super Cup Stock Car Series. And they're using the outdated steel bodies. And more or less, Hooters Pro Cup is forgetting about some of the independent drivers. Well, over the weekend, the issue came up. Some of the drivers from Hooters Pro Cup are wanting to come over to the Super Cup and run these new fiberglass bodies. And Mr. Joe Schmalen and the advisory board that they have, they announced we're not going to accept any of the newer bodies. We're going to run what we intended to run, and we're going to run the steel bodies this year. And so it's specifically for the independent drivers.
So you already got drivers trying to jump ship over to the new series.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And my hat's off. They said what they was going to do. They stuck to their guns. And by golly, Super Cup Series is coming around.
Well, it's going to take off.
One thing that's helping them is timing is everything. And right now, the timing is good for them, Skip, because as we've seen, drivers are staying closer to home because of the cost of fuel. And that's helping. That's going to help them. It's going to help the short tracks around the country, I think. There'll be less traveling going on.
You know, I agree with you, Jack. Don't get me wrong. I am a Hooters Pro Cup Series fan. Been traveling with them since in the 90s. I think it was 98.
Hey, you know, you don't have to apologize for what you say. You know what? There's a half a million NASCAR, diehard NASCAR fans that thinks Kyle Busch ought to be put into a cage. So don't apologize for what you're talking about.
Well, the sad part is to me...
Former Pro Cup driver,
and
Kyle
Busch. I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one that feels this way, but they've forgotten about some of the drivers. I think it's going to come out in the open when the series takes in the Milwaukee race. A lot of cars having to go up there. Cars will have to come home with the budgets that they have. There's going to be a rude awakening when we get to Milwaukee.
Well, you know what we get a lot of, and what a lot of questions have always been is, how come the dirt tracks get so many cars? Well, Wayne Anderson told us a few weeks ago, less laps, more money, less travel. You know, I mean, and you might be able to look at it that way with the new Cup Series, you know, the Super Cup Series, because they're less laps, which is less work on the car, you know, and it's going to be less money spent on the car, and it's less travel.
How about the fields? Do they have good fields? Do they have good crowds?
What, the dirt series?
Uh-huh.
Well, the one I'm working for right now is a brand-new series. We've had two races, and we've averaged 42 cars a race.
United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series, racing in Florida and Georgia and Alabama.
Alabama.
Sure enough.
Yep. We'll be racing at East Bay Raceway Park this weekend.
I'm telling you, Skip, these guys, one of the better late model drivers in Florida over the last, say, 10 years or so, Mike Bresnahan, you know.
Asphalt driver,
okay? Right. He's one of them guys that, you know, if he's in the race, he's always going to be running. He's got a chance to run up front, or if not win the race. And he just went to dirt. Ran his first dirt race at Ocala Speedway, which just went back to dirt, and won in the late models Saturday night. And remember, we talked about Friendship Speedway up there. We're going to hook up with them folks, and you're going to get them on with us.
Yeah, one of them was Phil Hall, former dirt driver himself, and there's another gentleman that's the managing partners of Friendship Speedway, and they converted that track over to dirt. After having been asphalt for the last 6 or 8 years.
It's just necessity, man.
Well, there's a lot of these asphalt drivers are switching over. Like David Pollin Jr. recently had a test in a dirt late model.
They're all over Florida.
Wayne Anderson, you know.
All over Florida. I mean, guys that have been racing for 20 years on asphalt are switching over. And, you know, I can't wait to talk to those people up at Friendship. And from what I understand, I talked to Mike Peters from Ocala Speedway this afternoon for a while, and he said those people up there, I think he thinks they contacted him. I don't think he actually hooked up with them, but they were trying to get in touch with him to give him some, I guess he had some questions or something, but hey, what the heck, man.
I'll do some research this week, and I'll see if I can't line them up.
Good deal. What else going on? What's happening in Southern Moto Racing? You ain't been sued by nobody this week?
No. We're going to run a story on Frank Fleming, and he's a driver that I kind of grew up with in racing.
Old guy?
Says that he's on the verge of winning a race. It feels like he can win a championship this year, and he says he's going to give it up when he turns 50. Well, he's 48 now, and he feels like now that he's getting ready to win, then he may have to extend his career a little bit. So we're going to run an article on him this week.
All right. Well, tell you what, Skip, you want to tonight we're going to talk to another one of your neighbors, Doug Smith, who's now the general manager over at Ace Speedway, just took over that job. And we're going to talk to Doug for a while. I guess he was the announcer over there for a while before he became the general manager.
Uh-huh.
And
Ace Speedway, fine facility, very clean facility. And going to run, they run on Friday nights, by the way, and they're going to run a Weaving Southern Modified here in the next 2 weeks.
Is that right? So you'll be over there?
I'll be right there.
Yeah, a lot of them racetracks in North Carolina are well kept up. That's one thing I will say. That most of them are real well taken care of.
Nothing compared to Martinsville Speedway. That's the most cleanest place, most nice, most hospitality track I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, you know, when the guy that runs the track drives you in the middle of the night on his golf cart to your car.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's not bad.
They have track owner.
Yeah,
there you go. The track owner does that. You know you got something good. We're going to talk later on tonight, too, Skip. We're going to talk to Chris Fontaine. He ran in the – he's decided to go run in the ASA. We want to talk to him because we want to find out more from a driver's perspective what the ASA-sanctioned Southeast Asphalt Tour is all about. They just ran their first race. Get ready to run their second race here on April 5th at Watermelon Capital Speedway. Then they're going to be down at USA International Speedway, which might be the last race they ever run there. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, man, the drums are pounding. You know, like, you know how they used to, like, go out in the woods, especially up in your neighborhood years ago where the Indians were still running around. They got the drums going and sent out messages. Well, the drums are going that June might be the last time, man.
That will be a sad one.
Yeah.
Now, let me remind you of something. Jeff Choquette, isn't he a front runner down there?
Yeah.
Hickory Speedway, a couple weeks ago, the Easter Bunny 150.
Yeah.
Finished 13th to 15th.
13th, I believe.
Cut out for him when he comes up here.
we'll tell him you said that.
No doubt.
Be speaking no English.
we'll talk to him, too. We're going to also talk to tonight, Skip, we're going to talk to Dennis Huth, the owner of the American Speed Association, and the guy that is in charge of all the sanctioning body stuff and has the ASA member track program. And
recently signed up, John Tapracone from DeSoto Super Speedway.
Yeah, they've been getting new guys all the time. And we're going to talk to Don Nerone, one of your – I know that you always find Don interesting.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk to him. We're going to talk to Casey Smith, who's another late-mile driver. So we're sticking in the stock car world tonight on Real Racing USA Live.
Good. So I'll go turn my computer on and listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Talk to you soon, man. Thanks for the info.
Guys, appreciate you having me on the show.
Skip Wall from Southern Moto Racing.
You know, we were going to have...
.com.
What happened to Steve from Five Flags?
We're going to do that next week.
Oh, you know, I got an email from up there that said they're going to let the Florida Spec motor run.
Yeah, we're there's
but they're going to let everybody else run traction control.
It is that day, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to talk to Billy Osborne, who went up to Crossville, Tennessee, to take over a track, and he's got quite a story to tell about Crossville. It's a And it is no April Fool. I'll tell you what, do you have some news items while I get Chris
Fontaine
on the
line? Sure. You know, today, 15 years ago today, we lost the 1992 Winston Cup champion, Alan Kowicki. That was a tough loss for everybody. It wasn't long after that we lost Davey Allison. The other thing is that, where did I do with this? that it looks like Roush Fenway Racing doesn't plan on suing Michael Waltrip Racing for stealing their traction bar or whatever it was. Jack Roush is accusing Michael Waltrip Racing of stealing this suspension part. And, of course, Michael Waltrip Racing was the one that supposedly turned Carl Edwards in, who was docked 100 points for taking the oil can lid off his car, which supposedly gives the car an unfair advantage. So, anyway, Jack Roush doesn't plan on suing Michael Waltrip Racing.
That's
isn't that special?
That's magnanimous.
Isn't it, though?
That's
sway bar. It was a sway bar.
That's magnanimous.
Magnanimously, yeah. That's a big word.
I'm telling you. Well, those guys get big paychecks, and they're doing some pretty silly things for people getting the kind of million-dollar paychecks they're getting.
You're talking about the guy who owns Roush Racing and the Boston Red Sox.
Give me a break.
We're worried about suing for a part.
All right, down to serious business here.
All right.
Welcome back to Real Racing USA, Chris Fontaine. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. How about yourself?
All right. Hey, Chris, I got to ask you, man, do you think that Waltrip Racing got an unfair advantage by stealing that sway bar?
I don't know. All the trick stuff they do, who knows?
Yeah, right.
Chrissy, you ain't going to get Chris to bite on that, man.
I'm telling you, well, you never seen Chris's NASCAR commercial on TV, have you?
No.
It's wild. It's a good one.
No, I haven't seen it.
He races a helicopter.
Huh.
That's a pretty cool commercial, Chris.
Yeah, it was really fun to be out on the runway, and it was pretty exciting with it flying right beside the race car. It felt like the rotor blades were going to hit me in the head.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah, it was right there, man. It's an awesome commercial. It's Channel 13.
Really?
Fox 13's commercial, yeah. So, Chris, you had a good run up there in the ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was an exciting weekend. We went up there Thursday and Friday. We were practicing, and we thought we were going to be able to be pretty competitive. We kept getting faster and faster. Then in qualifying, when we taped the car up, it really got a lot more downforce than it bottomed out. You know, we ended up qualifying 26th, but
this was at Mobile now.
Yeah, it was at Mobile. We ended up 26th out of 35, I guess. We're really, really disappointed with that. But I just went into it as the night. I was just going to have a good time. And about halfway through the race, all of a sudden, I started moving forward, and we got through a couple big wrecks, and just the car started coming to me, and I was able to pass up towards the front and just be able to pull up underneath the guys.
Now, basically, you're back up into the super late model ranks, right?
Well, this is a super late model engine with a two-barrel on it, or the crate cars, and we ran our crate car that race. We brought the super late model up there, and during our testing, the crate car felt better, and that was really the only reason why I picked it. I'm not sure which way is fastest still on the motors yet, but for that particular track, our crate car felt better.
Now, up there, what type of motor are they running? Not the crate, but like it's a spec motor, right?
Yeah, it's a spec motor or the super late model motor, and you have to put a 502 barrel on, I believe.
I found it interesting that you yourself, Brandon Johnson, and Sean Bass, who all last year ran the, you know, y'all from Florida, and y'all ran the ASA Late Model Series. You finished what, fourth, fifth, and sixth?
Yeah,
that's wild.
Awesome run.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What's Brandon? Is he he's still living in Florida, or has he moved off somewhere?
I really am not sure. We stay so busy at our shop trying to
gotcha.
Get things together that I'm not really one that follows a lot of other people. We're trying to stay so busy, and when we're not racing, I'm not having fun getting my mind off.
That's a damn good thing.
Yeah.
That's very good, Chris.
Honestly, good. On Monday, I asked the guys at the shop who won the cup race, because I'm interested in it, but I'm out doing other things.
There you go. That's a good thing to do.
That's cool. So how was the, how'd you judge the competition? Was it tough?
I thought it was great. There was a few guys that had been to the track before, and they were pretty dominant at it. Just like if anyone came down to the studio, I like to think that we were one of the top guys to watch. But there they had their few track picks, and they did very well. And a couple of the guys down from Florida, we ended up being able to compete with them a little bit.
Yeah, it was a really good run for a bunch of guys from Florida. You know, I see J.R. Garcia, Jay Middleton up in the top 20. And what a field of cars, 36 race cars.
Yeah, it was really surprising on fire. They just kept rolling in, and it was really incredible to see that get a turnout. And I think in our next racing, Cordell, Georgia, we're going to have even more with that race being televised.
Yeah, and you're going to get all them Georgia boys, too.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
Now, what made your decision to switch over to the ASA Southeast Late Model Tour?
One of the main reasons was the television. I want to get a little bit more exposure and have the rest of the country be able to see what we're doing. And the other, at the end of the season, me and some of the ASA top officials got into some arguments and just disagreements, and I chose to run the ASA Southeast Tour.
There you go, man. And,
Go ahead,
Jack.
Wait, can you talk about any
can
of that?
Can you elaborate?
At all? Can you elaborate on that? I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, steer something up. I'm just curious what. I mean, I thought you had a pretty good year last year. You had some ups and downs, and of course you had the bad luck deal at DeSoto where you were loaded for bear that night. But I thought you had a pretty good season. What issues did you have?
Just ever since the first race, we felt like they kind of had a grudge against us, and it felt like it kept getting worse and worse with some of the calls we got. No matter what, we always were sent to the back, it felt like, and I never got a call where there was a caution. I got to keep my position, and even from whenever I would qualify on the pole, it seemed like no matter what pill I drew out of the little stack, it would be 9 or 10, like there was nothing else in there, and I don't know, it might just have been bad luck for me, but the more we questioned it, and whenever we would question Ron Varney, he would not answer us and just come up, well, that's because the way I said it was. And many drivers' meetings, his answer was, I don't need you guys. And that's how he would be to the drivers. He would tell them he didn't need you in the drivers' meeting. And it felt like we weren't getting the respect we should have been getting as a team and as the rest of the drivers. We're the show. We're the ones who haul all this equipment up there and bring the big kind of money we're bringing. And we just didn't feel like he respected us and some of the other teams enough. And then I wasn't able to go to the point fund party at the end of the year. We had rented a private plane, and the heater in the plane broke. And so we couldn't make it because it was going to be about negative 20 degrees up in the air, so we weren't allowed to go by FAA standards, and they wouldn't give us our money.
So, you didn't get your points money?
No, I didn't, and I know some other of the top five teams didn't get their points money either, because they weren't able to make it to the points fund meeting. So,
really,
and on top of everything else, we decided that the SA Southeast Tour was where we needed to put our 47 Glendon Enterprise race car.
Well,
very interesting.
Certainly understand that,
because it was Chris that came to me at DeSoto and got me to because we tried, didn't we, Chris?
Oh yes, sir, we did. I cannot wait to run that race. We had waited all year for that, and finally, there were some other races where we were at the top of the practice charts, but that one, I believe we were the first in every chart they had, if not second, and then just to top it off with qualifying first. I mean, we were ready to go. That was one of the races I could not wait to start if any of them in my entire life, and we were just so disappointed that it got taken away.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Holy cow. So, Watermelon Capital. Now, you've been there before.
Yes, last year was our first time there, and we had a pretty good qualifying run. I think we were 6th, 7th, or 8th out of 30-something or 40 cars. So we're looking forward to going back, and we're heading out there Thursday morning, and we're going to start testing and see what we can get out of it.
Cool. So, you'll be there practicing on Friday and then race on Saturday?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Now, Kevin Ingram's still your crew chief, right?
Yes, sir. Together, I think
almost
6 years now.
Oh, I think we lost him.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
His cell phone sounded like it was getting faint.
Yeah, it was.
Just,
okay. Yeah, some great, it was Preston Peleiter who won the race. Michael Pope was second. John Bolin was third. Chris Fontaine fourth. Brandon Johnson was fifth. Sean Bass was sixth. David Jones. Of course, some of the other Florida drivers, J.R. Garcia, former truck racer down here and late model racer, finished 13th. Dakota Stroop was in there at 16th.
Hi, Rick. We got him back.
Yeah. You there, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we were talking about Kevin. Kevin's even got a win this year in the limited.
Yeah, he went out on his night off and did a great job. He went out in DeSoto and won a race.
Yeah, I've got to call a couple races that Kevin ran, and he's a hell of a race car driver.
Oh, yeah, I love to go watch him. But he goes on his days off, so I'm more off doing vacation stuff, and then I get to hear about it, and they all have a good time, and I'm happy for him that he gets to go do that. I know it's hard for him to sit and watch me race, and he doesn't get to, so I'm excited for him. He really does get to go out and race.
You know, looking at the schedule, Chris, you know, of course, USA International Speedway, I mean, we've had some people tell us this, like Eddie Hoffman, for instance, ran pretty good in using a crate motor against, ASA motor against the super lates there because he had no choice, but because his other motor blew up. But more and more drivers are telling us that because of the pavement at USA, the supers don't have that big of an advantage over the crate motors. And then, of course, you got Bronson after that, and Bronson Speedway, and you know that supers don't have an advantage at that track.
Yeah, it seems to be really weird. I was super, super surprised at the times the crate cars were running at a Speed Fest in Lakeland. I guess at the end of the race, but you could be competitive. To make the show might be a little tough with just a full-fledged super, but when they put that fiber on it and we get to run our rules, it really seems like it makes the even playing field and can really put more cars eligible to run so we have bigger fields and a more exciting race.
Yeah, definitely got some good things. I tell you what, we're going to catch up with you at USA. I'm not going to be able to go to I wanted to go to Watermelon Capital, but we have things that we got to do that weekend, and also the weekend of Bronson. But we'll catch up with you up at Lakeland on May the 3rd at USA International Speedway. And hey, man, we wish you the best at the Watermelon Capital Speedway and throughout the year. And what about your sponsors and what kind of sponsorship you got going this year?
It's still Glennon Enterprises, and they're going to be our full fledged sponsor this year. And just looking forward to having another good competitive year and try and get a boys championship and a couple wins if we can.
All right, man.
Cool. All right, Chris. Great talking to you again, brother.
All right, thank you guys. Enjoy it.
All right.
See ya.
Yeah, Chris Fontaine, man. Chris is always outspoken, man. I mean, I like the guy. Like I said, the ASA race at DeSoto, it was Chris that came and got me, and you know, we tried hammering it out, and that's old hack, but always liked Chris, man. Some of the things he did at DeSoto was just, well, I'll never forget one night, he thought he had a bad call. He went to his pit box, got this huge pair of glasses out, and gave them to the flagman.
So he's not only, Chris is outspoken, but he also has a sense of humor.
Yes,
about it. He never gets too wrapped up in it. And, you know, I like that. I ask him about Brandon. He races against Brandon all the time. He ain't got time to worry about Brandon.
No,
he's off with his thing. Mm. But tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Doug Smith from Ace Speedway.
All right. Real Racing USA. We'll be right back.
Presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many.
Your star.
Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie.
Shiny, shiny star.
Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
Well, that's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused, even if you're seldom in focus.
Oh.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody. Because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we are back with Real Racing USA, and we're going to travel up to North Carolina, Ace Speedway, and we got Doug Smith on the line with us tonight. Doug, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful. We finally got the rain out of the way, and we're getting ready to go racing.
All right, tell us a little bit about your history and Ace Speedway.
Well, I've been up at Ace Speedway for 2.5 years as their announcer. And over the course of time, had seen some management changes and stuff take place. And when the new ownership came in, I knew they were looking for a general manager, and applied for the job. And we negotiated for quite some time, and it took us about a year, and we finally put the deal together, and just started as the general manager here at Ace Speedway.
Now, what is your background in auto racing? Do you have one besides announcer?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have to say I've probably seen some of the greatest racers that's ever come through racing, because I was at Concord, the old Concord Motor Speedway. It was located in Concord, North Carolina, out on Highway 601, back when they had the old Big Ten Series and ran a lot of late model sportsman races. So I got to see a lot of guys who were up running Winston, Winston Cup Sprint Cup today. That came through Concord and raced the likes of Ernie Irvin and Bobby Labonte, Jack Sprague, Rich Bickle. These were some of the great guys that I got to see come through. And I've been down there for 16 years in my 17th season there, doing the announcing there. And I've also been associated over at Lowe's Motor Speedway for about 15 years now, and doing some announcing for them. I used to do some of the Cup and some of the Busch, and then 2004 kind of had a health setback with a heart attack, and that'll kind of wake you up and slow you down just a little bit. So I slowed down a little bit, and kind of for the last 2.5 years, I've kind of worked both racetracks, and the opportunity to come here full-time was just something I couldn't pass up. I think I've spent a lot of great times with a lot of great promoters like Humpy Wheeler and Roger Schlack, who I think have done a great job in teaming up. And Humpy has taught Roger an awful lot. Roger came from a racing background, too, with his folks owning a track up in Canada. And also to work under Henry Furr and at the old Concord Motor Speedway, and then, of course, the Layton family that owns Concord Motorsport Park. So the background that I had, they were very open with me and showed me a lot of the ropes. And I felt that I've always felt that success is when opportunity and preparedness meet, and I think that I'd prepared well, and the opportunity came, and we're looking to make Ace Speedway one of the top 10 tracks in the country.
He's not an announcer, Rick.
Yeah, well, he's saying that because I'm an announcer too. I'm sitting back here listening to all this, you know, and I'm thinking about how you went from the announcing job to the general manager job.
Well, I think that one of the things when I've, with all the people that I've worked with, I've kind of spent a lot of time in the business end of it, and been included in business decisions that we made, and kind of did things in a team concept. And in the old days with Henry Furr at Concord, and kind of started out, it was the old dictatorship. It was his way or the highway. And racers would always say, you know, Henry, I'm not coming back. Well, I found out over the years that meant 2 weeks. So if a racer gets mad at you, usually 2 weeks they'll be back if they say
exactly
that.
2 weeks. You know,
2 weeks, that's what never coming back means.
Mm-hmm.
So being that I had the opportunity to learn the business side there, when I got over to Lowe's Motor Speedway, of course, anybody that's had an opportunity to spend any time with H.A. Humpy Wheeler, I've got to say he is the dean of promoters. He has probably forgotten more in promotions than a lot of us will ever learn. But Humpy Wheeler taught me that there's an entertainment value in everything that you do, and if you create an entertainment value, people will come. And that's where that I think I got to see an awful lot of the promotional side of racing, as well as seeing actual the ins and outs of what we did with the racing, with the points, with the funds, with how we dispersed them. And when you got to spend that, then, as I said, when the opportunity came, I felt I was well prepared to step in. And I have a marketing background with radio and TV that I spent 21 years in. So I kind of had the marketing side. Along the way, of course, many of us who have worked in the industry find out that every now and then you get a little burnout, so you step outside for a little bit and go get a real job. And so I spent some time in the restaurant business, which I think prepared me well for the concessions end. So I think I just felt like that the time was right at my age to make a move. And the great people here at Ace Speedway. And when I walked in here 2.5 years ago, what really impressed me the most was the reception that I got from the fans, from the drivers. It was just take your breath away. And it kind of humbles you. And I truly felt a part of this community and have felt for quite some time. So I just felt like it was somebody local taking over, even though I don't live that close to the racetrack. But this has become a family to me.
Well, Doug, how did you get started as an announcer?
Strangely enough, my background in radio, I was actually handling advertising for a gentleman who had a what's called a super late model now, a late model sportsman car. And on the end of all of his ads, I always put that you could see the car at the Speedway, at Concord Motor Speedway on Saturday nights. So we were kind of picking, and he knew I had an interest in racing, so he invited me to come down and watch him race. And, you know, you just can't just watch racing. You know, if you're there with a team, you got to get your hands dirty and you got to get involved. And so over the course of time, I spent the year helping the team. And each time that I went to the racetrack, the Furs would always ask me, did you talk about us on the radio? So they were very nice and gave me a pit pass being a member of the media. And I appreciated that. Well, at the banquet, I found out they were looking for an announcer. So they asked me to go introduce the band, which I did. They liked it. They came over and said, look, we've got a go-kart race in a couple of weeks. Could we hear you on the microphone or call a race? And I was there for about 30 minutes, and I came back, kind of started and got a little bit. I didn't really say that a little bit earlier in my life. I'd done a little go-kart racing, called it, and I'd also dirt racing up at Madison with the 311 Motor Speedway. And so I know that in dirt track racing and go-kart racing, you always got to get your next divisions lined up because your show's got to move right on. And about 30 minutes into it, Henry Furr walked up and said, I pay this on Thursday nights, this on Friday night, and this on Saturday night. He never asked me, did I want the job? I never left.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Well, you know, Doug, one of the things that is obvious to anybody who pays attention to the short track racing industry is that asphalt tracks around the country, by and large, there's a real struggle to balance the entertainment and get drivers without having the drivers to pay at all. Putting people in the seats is tough, and it's got to be helpful, I would think, because, I mean, you fit the bill for a lot of what our arguments are. Is I'm always arguing that just because you can buy a racetrack doesn't mean that you're a promoter, and you know, you have to be able to, you have to understand the entertainment aspect of this. It's not about racing, and it seems that this does give you, I would think, a leg up on the game, man.
And that I would say thanks to H.A. Humphrey Wheeler for.
Yeah.
And the reason that I would say that is they have a program called the Summer Shootout Series with Legends and Bandolera cars that's done during the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things after about year two, year three, he came up to the announcers and he told us, he said, look, I want a carnival atmosphere here.
Bingo.
Get entertained. As long as that it's done in clean fun, then it will be acceptable. So it was at that time that the infield was tore up, and I decided to, being an announcer, you test the waters, right, guys?
Right, absolutely.
Sure. So I just kind of spouted off my head one night that I saw somebody slide through the infield, and, you know, the stories go, and I can't dispute them. Rick Mast to this day says Humpy Wheeler sent him a bill for $100 for sliding through the grass. So that's always been Humpy Wheeler's thing, was the grass. So when it was getting tore up and people were sliding through it and they were getting ready to lay new sod, and every time it seemed like they made an improvement, we'd get a rainstorm and somebody would slide through. So just off the top of my head one day, I said, well, you know, Doug, it's time to test the waters. So I said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the number to call for landscaping is 1-800-CALL-HUMPY. H.A. Humpy Wheeler, president of Lowe's Motor Speedway, would be more than glad to send out some sprint cars, some nationwide cars, some legend cars, some ARCA cars. They, too, will slide through your grass, put ruts in it, just like we have here at the Lowe's Motor Speedway. Remember, that number to call is 1-800-CALL-HUMPY. Well, I really didn't think about it anymore during the night. So a little bit later, in a little bit of a rain delay and coming out of it, you know, I did it again. And when I finished, I happened to catch out of the corner of my eye someone that would catch your attention standing kind of near you. And it was, of course, H.A. Humpy Wheeler. And I thought, Doug, it's been nice working here. It's been great. Enjoy what you got left because you're probably not coming back after tonight. But he looked over and winked, and he said, you know, that's good fun.
That's cool.
So it kind of taught that we got involved with the crowd, and that's something that we do here at Ace Speedway. I have what I call, I remember covering a Bassmasters tournament that took place up in Greensboro. And Ray Scott, the former owner of Bass, always had his A team and his B team. So at Ace, we're fortunate enough to have backstretch and a front stretch grandstands. So my backstretch is my A team, and the front stretch is my B team. And we kind of get some rivalry going between the two and see who can make the most racket and everything. And it's really cool.
What kind of audience? What's an average fan count at Ace Speedway during the year?
Strangely, last year, just kind of looking through the records, we were looking at about 1,200 to 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And opening night, we had 2,500 last Friday night.
Way cool. You run on Friday nights, and you got. Skip Wall was telling me that I haven't been to Ace Speedway. He said it was one of the cleanest, nicest facilities in North Carolina.
Well, I firmly believe that, not because that I'm here. I remember I spent 2.5 years looking out over the facilities, and that's one of the things that impressed me very much about the layout of the track. Just the look, we have 61 acres. We're located out of Burlington, North Carolina. Which would be, if you're looking on the map from long distance, would be just kind of outside of Greensboro and Durham, kind of in the middle between the two.
Like on 85?
Be 85, 40, and we, you know, kind of sit back in the hills just a little bit outside of Elon College.
Yeah. That's cool. What are the big classes that you have there, and what are the car counts like?
Our featured division, of course, is the NASCAR late model stocks in the Whelen All-American Series, and, of course, we are a NASCAR-sanctioned track. We also run a Grand American Modified. We have a limited sportsman division, which is kind of a training ground for guys to step up into late models. We have our mini stocks, which are, of course, your four cylinders. And then, of course, you have your front-wheel drive that we call our extreme. So we try to make racing affordable for anybody that wants to come to the racetrack. And, of course, you know, the front-wheel drive cars aren't very expensive. You're probably getting one for less than $1,000. Gut it out and go have some fun.
And in all reality, that is going to be the future of your lower classes because, you know, the rear-wheel drive cars are starting to get to be a thing of the past.
Well, it is. And you start to, when you really start to look at racing, as it's going, we all know that it's become very expensive. You guys touched on it very early. You have to have good car counts. Good car counts puts fans in the stands. Fans in the stands help so that you can pay higher purses so that you can attract good drivers. Fortunately, here at Ace, I think everyone in the upper division, the upper echelon of late model stock racing, you're either well-financed or if you're kind of racing out of your pocket, you tend to look for tracks that are close by. And I think that's going to help short track racing this year. I think that was kind of instrumental. Of course, we had beautiful weather, 75-degree weather all day on last Friday. But we had 75 cars to show up for opening night. And, as I said, about 2,500 fans. So we really had a fantastic opening night. And, you know, we're really looking into the future, everything that we look at. We're also stepping kind of out of the nine dots of this. We're bringing concerts in this year. We built a tractor pull track so that we can have a tractor pull show. We're bringing in some touring series. So we really want to give the fans. And when I came and announced last week to the fans, there'll be suggestion boxes that are put at my front gate and back gate. And I ask our fans to please put suggestions in there. It's our job then to collect them. See what the fans, I want to see what show the fans want to see. And then we're going to work hard to bring in whatever series, whatever it takes to make our fans happy.
Well, Doug, do you guys in the Carolinas, you've been around all these tracks. Is there like a what kind of relationship is there between the tracks and the touring series that get around? Is it a good relationship, or is there sometimes some adversarial relationships? I know I've seen places where the and you know, I'm in Florida, and I tell you,
I
there's
won't book you because you're racing there.
Huh?
Is it one of those deals where I won't book you because you're racing over there?
Well, where there's an idea by some promoters that the traveling series, the touring series,
takes away from the track,
takes away from the local track, gets the drivers going other tracks instead of your track.
I think it's how you look at it, and I think it's what you do to enhance, to keep your people right here and show them that, you know, we bring these series in for you. With opportunity, of course. We're fortunate with, of course, the Wheeland Southern Modified Tour will be coming to town a week after next. And Brian King, who races on the tour, is a former track champion, the winningest driver in the history of the racetrack here at Ace Speedway. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of proud when we see him on the tour.
What's his name?
Brian King.
Brian King?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He'll be in the number 17 Adams Towing and Recovery machine when they come here. He got his first victory here on tour. He has consistently proven himself, and then he comes to Concord and runs the North-South Shootout in November every year, and he puts himself against the best there is, and when you do that and compete, run top 10, considering some of the money that the northern guys spend, the southern guys just can't quite keep up sometimes in the spending, at least not on a broad perspective as they can do.
Was forever thus.
You understand how that, you know, we're kind of used to guys coming out and, you know, struggling to get a set of tires.
Sure.
You get as you come down to a big show like that, and you look over, and every time a Northern Modified comes in, they bolt on four new fresh ones and go out, and they've got about 10 sets of tires. So, but I think it's how you look, and if you bring your series in, and you don't. You keep your prices where people can afford to come. And I think one of the things that short track racing, because of gasoline prices stuff, I think it attributes that people are going to stay a little bit closer to home.
Yep.
They're looking for an entertainment value. I think it's the greatest time to be in short track racing. I do agree that in some of the upper divisions, it's a little bit harder to compete because of the amount of money. But I think your lower divisions is where there's entertainment value, there's great racing. And if you promote it good and promote it hard, it all becomes important. You know, we always say we have that feature division. I want 5 feature divisions at Ace Speedway.
Sure. And you're in the $10 to $12 range for tickets?
$10.
$10. There you go.
$10.
There you go.
Children 6 to 12 are like $5.
Yeah.
6 are free.
There you go.
Well, I'll tell you, Doug, during the course of this year, we're going to stay in touch with you. And,
Love to be on the show. I appreciate it. I invite all of our listeners, check out our website. It's www.acespeedway.com. Yep. Love to hear your comments.
Yeah, Rick's been sitting over here reading your website while we were talking with you. And
wonderful.
Really, yeah. Nice website.
Well, we get some of your drivers on. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell our buddy Skip to track down Brian King, and we're going to get him on Real Racing USA here as soon as we can.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and we'll stay in touch with you throughout the year, and if you get any breaking news and we haven't called you, you call us.
We'll do that.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Doug.
Thanks for having me tonight.
All right. Great talking to you, Doug.
Doug Smith from Ace Speedway up in North Carolina, right over there between Raleigh and Greensboro.
Speedway has been around for 52 years. You know, started out as a dirt track, of course.
Daniel Boone.
Yep, 1990, they paved it, expanded it to 0.4 miles, so it's a good-sized racetrack. They run, you know, Hooters runs there every once in a while. Looks like they got a class called Flathead Fords. But the Wheeland Modifieds, that's the big deal there. Of course, Wheeland Modified, man, I mean, right there in the Mid-South, going up to the North, man, that is a class that's coming on.
Yeah, and Skip will be there to cover that race. He covers all the – Skip Wall will be there to cover that race for a Real Race in USA and his website, Southern Moto Racing.
I forgot to ask Doug if he's given up the microphone yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to find out about that. That's a good question. So we're going to take a break here. As a matter of fact, we were going to have Jimmy Lang on, but Jimmy must be working hard. Either that or he's out spending the money.
Celebrating.
Celebrating still the win.
You know, there was an interesting story about that that a lot of people didn't know. That
it's on this interview, Rick.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, sure. I know where you're going with that.
Okay.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Jimmy, this win meant a great, great deal.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there was a couple little things, you know. And I don't know, you probably didn't catch last night's show, Rick, but we talked about this on Inside Florida Racing last night. Jessica Murphy,
mm-hmm.
the truck, she's a 17-year-old truck driver. Dad's Mike Murphy.
Right.
And she set the track record in the trucks last year at Bronson.
Okay.
And Jimmy knew that.
Uh-huh.
And Jimmy went and got her. She was up there, you know, being a spectator.
Right.
At Bronson in the ASA late model race, just there hanging out. He went and got her before qualifying. And she walked him around the track. They walked the whole... As a matter of fact, Mike Murphy was looking for his daughter and couldn't find her, and he saw her out there. And they walked the whole track. She showed him the line that she broke the track record in. So then they went in. Jimmy went out and qualified, followed her line,
broke the
track record, set fast time, yeah. started sixth, ended up winning the race. A very emotional game. And he gets into that here in this little interview clip. It's about 3 minutes long. I'm going to play that with Jimmy Lang because we couldn't get a hold of him. We'll talk to him again soon. And then we'll be right back with Billy Osborne.
I do believe we'll be hearing more from Jimmy Lang this year, too.
No doubt about it. And we'll see if we can get this thing to work right.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if you're racing...
What a race. Yes, sir, man. We worked hard for this one. You know, we come here last year. We rolled out the trailer. We come and test. We, you know, we didn't get that fast last year when we was testing, you know, but we come out the next, you know, next week it was race day. Come out, we rolled out trailer, you know, second, third, fastest, you know, all day long. And then, you know, then we... This year we come here, you know, we rolled out trailer. We're like 10th, 9th, fastest, you know. It was like, damn. There's half the cars and we're doing half as good. I mean, it was kind of frustrating and aggravating, you know. It was tough, but you know, we got faster and faster and we tried stuff. We got pretty fast, and then today, man, we set the track record in qualifying, and we inverted and drawed a six, and just worked our way through it. There's a bunch of races. I thought one time the 75 and the 88, I thought we was all gonna just pile up going into one, but I got around it. I mean, it was rough. It was awesome.
Well, you know, it's like the Cup has its Martinsville and its Bristol. This is a little bit similar to that. All the guys are like, you can't pass here without touching somebody, can you?
It's impossible. I mean, it's almost impossible. I mean, it's impossible. It's crazy because, I mean, the car's got to be able to turn so good. It's unbelievable. And that's the only thing you work on when you get here. I mean, forward bite, you know, you got to get the forward bite good, but first thing you'll be working on when you come to Brunson is getting it to turn in the center of the corner.
And, you know, and that last little deal there, I mean, before the green-white checker with the 75 and the 88, all heck was breaking loose. Do you know what happened there, or were you just flying on automatic?
It was crazy. I mean, we was just up on the wheel so hard, you know. I mean, I slipped the front tires, I was just driving the wheels off of it. The front tires started going away, and this car started getting a little tight in the center, started pushing up a little, and then the 75, he wiggled me, got me a little loose, you know, and then when we went off into one, the 88 just never lifted and just hit the 75, and we all just kind of, I don't even know what happened, we just all went off in there, you know, and off in the corner, and I somehow missed it and got around it, thank God.
Did you feel confident when you got there on the green-white checker deal? Did you feel confident you'd be able to pull that off?
Oh, yeah, I think, yep, because Gerstner, you know, he was fast, but I knew we had a faster car than the couple cars behind us. I knew we had it, you know.
And, all right, man. Thank you. Jimmy Lang, good job, man.
Yeah, I got to mention, man, today, a week ago, my best friend, he got killed on the street bike, and I told everybody from, you know, a couple days after we got over, started getting over, you know, I told him, I said, we can go to Bronson, man. I got it, because he was supposed to meet us here and stay at the hotel with us, help out on, you know, on the team. He's been a couple races with us, helping out, and I mean, I gave this race all to him, and I feel like he was here with me, you know.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no batteries filling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
All right, Real Racing USA, we're back on the Tuesday night edition of Real Racing USA Live. Jack, who we got on us with us?
We have Billy Osborne, who's one of the is over trackside tonight.
Right.
And out of Daytona, been doing that radio show with those guys, and went on a little adventure. Billy, tell us about your adventure. This is one of the ups and down adventures of racing, man.
Well, I had a good opportunity about 3 months ago. I had a couple of gentlemen decide they wanted to buy a racetrack in Tennessee, in Crossville, Tennessee, and I got involved with them, which I don't regret any of it, no matter what went down. I just got moved up there last week, got started last Monday, and yesterday came to an end. They decided on Sunday that the deal wasn't going to go through. They weren't going to buy the racetrack, and so here I am. I'm home again. So now after you leave everything, which I left a job of 12 years, and I left Volusia Speedway Park, and now I'm back. So I don't know where to go from there. It's just one of those things that works out that way. So, you know, a few years ago I was involved with the Putnam County Speedway, and the same thing happened at the end of the year. It didn't reopen, and just kind of left me in the same predicament. So, you know, we were talking a little earlier about it today, and it's just how it goes, you know, in racing. You could go try something one day, and the next day it'd be gone. So, you know, I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. I mean, I don't.
No doubt.
Hard to word it in, you know.
Yeah, no, it is. If you're in this business long enough, and you really get involved in it from, you know, working in racing, whether you're in media or working with tracks or traveling series, if you are in this business long enough, it's going to happen to you. I swear, because everybody,
it's going to bite you in the ass.
Every once in a while, it's just going to bite you, man, and. But I tell you, I listened to Trackside Tonight last night. That's when I learned about your fate there with that whole deal. Because we were going to have you on the show tonight anyway. We had been planning on it to talk to you about the whole deal. And I guess we're just talking about it from a different perspective than we were. But, you know, tell us a little bit about your racing, your career in racing to this point and the stuff you've done. I mean, just listening to Randy Dye and Joe Lineberry are over there, the guys you work with Trackside Tonight. I mean, you can sense that they have just a tremendous respect for you and what you do and have done in racing. So tell folks a little bit about you, man, and what you've done in this game.
Well, I've been racing around. As a matter of fact, I think when my mom's water broke, she was at the racetrack. And I've been around racing my whole life. My grandfather raced. My dad was around racing. My brother still races. And I just got into it, you know, helping friends and working on cars here and there. And 1 week went out to Volusia Speedway Park and was doing the tow truck. And to be honest with you, I told them that all I asked for was I wanted to get a set of flags. I wanted to get a set made. I asked them where they get them made, and I guess they thought I wanted to be a flagman. So the next thing I know, now what they call the Dirt Car Nationals, I was the assistant flagman to Rick Bristol. Been about 10 years ago, I guess, or so, and that's where I've been ever since. I've been flagging, and when the race weeks got over that year, I didn't want to flag anymore. I didn't really want to flag at all. I just asked them how to get a set of flags, because when we were kids, we'd race bicycles and race big wheels or race anything, and I was always flagging. I wouldn't race. I just flagged. So I kind of got into flagging at Volusia Speedway Park, and that's where I've been ever since. And I've been up there flagging, and I went to Palatka a couple years ago, Putnam, and was race directing, and now for the last couple years at Volusia, I've been race directing and flagging from the flag stand. And I've had a lot of opportunities in racing, as a lot of people know. I'm the type of person that if you wreck it, the racetrack that I'm at on Saturday. I'm on the phone with you Sunday making sure everything's okay. That's just how I do business. I like to call and talk to all the races. And they know that that doesn't mean that Saturday they're going to get an edge, because it's not. They know. I try to have a friendship with everybody in racing and try to be, but also, too, on Saturday, do everything the right way. You know, you run Saturday's show like you're running a business. You don't go into to Walmart and expect your friend to give you a break on the, you know, on the product, and that doesn't happen with me in racing. And I think a lot of people understand that, and that's where a lot of people get respect for me at. And that's the way I've always been, because I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the competitor side. I've never driven a car, but I've been on the competitor side as working on cars and working on my brother's car, and I've been on the other side, too, as an official. So I see both sides of the deal. But as far as the experience in racing, I've done every job at the racetrack. There's nothing I can't do. I've even ran a scoreboard once or twice, and the only thing I haven't done is announcing, and since Joe's the announcer, he can continue to do that because he's really good at it, as everybody knows. But as far as do anything, I'll do anything at track. I'll stay there and pick up trash. It don't matter to me. I just love to be around racing. I love the racers, and I love the people around it, you know, and I think a lot of people realize that by now. And, you know, you guys have been around. I've seen you at Lakeland. I've seen you around here and there, and we always talk about some kind of racing, you know, and I know I could just be the typical official, but I'm not. I mean, I care about what I do. I'll tell you the truth. I was in Tennessee on Sunday, and guys were calling me about what happened Saturday, asking me questions. And one guy called me last night. I'm on my way home. I'm driving in my truck, and he calls and was talking about some of the restarts at Volusia. And I said, listen, really, I'm not working there anymore, but I didn't see what happened to you, but if you tell me. And he said that when the leader passed the pole coming off turn four, somebody jumped to the outside and passed him. And I said, well, to be honest with you, the rules are, if, as long as you're nose to tail, when the leader hits the pole, you can fire him. He goes, okay, I didn't know that. Nobody ever explained it to me, but I appreciate you helping me. I didn't have to do it, but I did it because I wanted to. I did it because I enjoy it, and I wouldn't leave him stuck out there. And I think everybody understands that's how I am, and maybe that's the reason why. But it's kind of got me down in the dumps, this whole situation. And like I told Joe and Randy yesterday, I'm going to go back and do the show with them on Monday. But as far as going back to officiating anywhere, I don't know what I want to do right now, because it's kind of like a not really a smack in the face. This is kind of like a slap down on top of the head. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, well, Joe probably gave you some pretty good advice there about, step back for a minute, man. Take a breath, you know?
All right, that's exactly what I plan on doing. I'm going to just step back and look. I think this week I'm going to get out of town and enjoy a little racing, because Saturday night there was no racing in Tennessee. Everything got rained out, and it's probably the first Saturday night in 10 or 12 years that I haven't been at a racetrack somewhere. So, and it was different. I'll be honest with you. It was different.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoy it, that's for sure.
Now, at Volusia, they got a pretty stout program there, not only throughout the year, but especially in February. And you do all the flagging. You flag during that whole time, right?
I do flag during during Dirt Car Nationals. I do flag. I usually hire Brad Hockaday. He comes in and helps with the sprint car deal.
Yeah.
It's harder for me the second week, because I work the whole second week by myself. And I have a bad shoulder that has been bothering me over the last few years. So it's worked out that Brad's came and helped me, and then I do the second week by myself. But as far as all the flagging during the Dirt Car Nationals, it's mostly me and mostly Brad. And usually the second week it's all me, and it's, I mean, it can be tiresome, that you guys have no 12 straight nights. So,
yeah, that's a lot of flagging.
Well, you know, I mean, you get going on it, and don't get me wrong, I'm excited when it happens. But I, like I always said, I love sprint cars. I like it when they get here, but I love it when they leave. So,
no doubt,
the week is when I like to work the most with the big blocks and with the super late models, and also too. I mean, it hurts because you don't get to go other places to see other things. That's why when I'm not racing there at Volusia, I usually like to go someplace else.
Yeah, I just got off a 5.5-year stretch at DeSoto, and I know what that's like, 40 weeks, 42 weeks, you know, same track every night. As much as you love the guys and as much as you love the racing, you miss going to them other tracks.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy going to other places. I enjoy going to see other racing, and, you know, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't mind flagging at other places, but right this minute, you know, that's not the main objective. I really always wanted to get into the race directing deal, and that finally got to my way, and I did, like I said, I did it at Palatka a couple of years ago, and I started doing it at Volusia. But I've done it from the flag stand at Volusia for 2 years, and now this year I finally got moved to the towel where they give you ice cream and stuff like that, and it lasted 2 weeks, and I walked away from it.
You know, Billy, from what I get, you were taking this race directing thing as like this wasn't just a Saturday night gig. Straighten me out on this. I've said this many times to different promoters that It's never made sense to me why something bad happens. The guy gets pissed off on Saturday night at the racetrack because he got a bad call, or you know, somebody put him in the wall or whatever the situation is. It's still there on Monday and he wants to talk to somebody at the track. So he calls up the office and he's talking to either somebody in the office or he's talking to the owner of the track or the promoter. And it's always been my idea, why isn't he talking to the race director? And if the race director isn't at the track, he can still pick up a phone and talk to the guy. It just seems to me that all that stuff should be the purview of the race director and not drag the owner and other people into it.
One thing that most of the racers at Volusia Speedway Park know about me is that if I have a problem, I usually take care of it first thing, and that's Sunday morning. I have most of my racers as telephone numbers. If I see something that I don't agree with, if I see something that I think was bad, I usually on the phone with them Sunday morning taking care of it.
Sure.
As far as calling the racetrack on Monday, a lot of times they'll call the track on Monday, and if they call the track, a lot of times they'll say, just call Billy, and they'll give them my phone number. But a lot of times the racers will just call me
right
on Monday. They won't even hesitate to call the track.
Yeah, that seems to be the way it ought to be.
One thing I always tell them, if you have a problem on Saturday night, don't leave here mad. Come see me before you go. I'm not going anywhere. I hang around when the races is over, and I take care of their problem. You see, because I think, if you take care of the problem this week, there's no problem next week. You see what I'm saying? Don't let it hold a grudge. Don't let them hold a grudge, because next week they're liable to show up and try to wreck the other guy. So I always try to get the two parties together on Monday, talk to one, get his side, talk to the other, get his side, and then move on from there.
And I have literally seen that where they've let things steam and just go and go and go.
Week after week.
And until it's just totally and completely out of control.
Well, you know, the biggest problem is nowadays is that's what a lot of people just don't care. A lot of people, well, it's a racing incident. I understand it's a racing incident, but I promise you the other guy is upset. If I accidentally get into you, he, no matter what, he thinks that I did it on purpose. And that's the way racers think. I'm sorry, but you don't have a lot of the guys nowadays that say, man, it was an accident. I know it was an accident. And even if the crew member comes up to him and said, hey, man, he didn't mean to get into you, no matter what, the guy sitting in behind that wheel automatically thinks that when somebody wrecked him, he did it on purpose. You know, and that's where I come in. If I've seen it, like the first week, the racetrack was a little bit rough. I seen a couple guys get together. The guy running third got into the second place guy, but he hit the hole in the corner and the car bounced up a lane and turned him around. Well, when the race was over, I went down to the pay window, and the guy was standing there, and I said, you do realize that so-and-so didn't mean to get into you. He goes, man, he knocked the up out of me. And I said, well, he didn't mean to, but he hit that hole and the car bounced and hit you. And he goes, you think so? I said, I know so. I watched it. And then I watched everybody behind you hit the same hole. And every race is the same thing. They hit the hole and they would jump up a lane. And he understood. He goes, man, I thought sure he wrecked me. And I said, no, he didn't wreck you. And that's the thing about that is if I tell the driver something, I'm honest with him. And you have to be honest with what you see. Now, don't get me wrong. If I see so-and-so deliberately wreck you, then I know, and I'll call him up and say, hey, bud, you got into him. You know, I don't care what you think. I seen you. You know, so I seen one guy one night driving underneath the flag stand and just run into the back of another guy. Well, he went down in 3 and 4 the same lap. The guy that just got drilled went off in the corner and drilled the other guy and spun him around. Well, the very next week at the driver's meeting, the guy came up to me and goes, you see that guy wrecked me last week? I said, yeah, but I also seen you drilling right beneath him. And the guy looked at me and goes, oh, you saw that, huh? I said, there's not too much I don't see, buddy. That's the thing nowadays. The problem is that if you let the problem continue, it keeps building and building and building, and sooner or later, you keep building pressure, and that thing's going to blow up.
Sure enough.
When it blows up, it's going to be ugly for a couple people.
So you ready to get back in the saddle over trackside tonight?
I'm ready. I think, I talked to Randy yesterday. I'm pretty ready to do that. I enjoy doing the show with the guys, man. I enjoy it. I enjoy it so much, it's not even funny, and I tell you, that was going to be one of the for sure things I was going to miss. Now, don't get me wrong. I was going to be able to finally have something that I've always wanted. I wanted to be a promoter somewhere, and that's always been a goal of mine. But sooner or later, it'll come around. I mean, I'm 36 years old, and I think someday I'm going to get the chance where either I'm going to have my own racetrack, so I'm going to promote somebody else's racetrack. And I promise you, when I get that opportunity, it's going to be huge.
Well, you know, you got, there's no doubt, man. A lot of stuff could happen in the next 20 years in your life, buddy, let me tell you.
There's a lot going on right now that you'll be falling on your feet real quick.
Hey, a lot of things could happen in the next 24 hours.
There you go, brother.
I've been on the phone with Volusia today a little bit and on the phone with a few other people. And, you know, I think the best thing to do is I'm just going to take a week off and back up. And I may hit the Lucas Oil race at Screven on Friday and may hit the Lucas Oil race at Brunswick on Saturday, just to get away for a little bit and enjoy myself. I got a couple buddies that are going to Charlotte to the car show, and they call me today and say, come go with us, come on. And I said, no, I think I'm going to just watch some racing somewhere. And I'll gather it up. I'll do something. If I have to, I'll take my flags out, and I'll flag the cars up and down the street here where I live.
There you go, man.
All right, Billy.
Going to be a good late-model race down at East Bay too, brother.
That's what I saw. I saw the Ken Kenny deal. Man, the Ken Kenny deal is working out pretty good.
That's where I'm working right now.
So far, so good.
You're announcing for them, correct?
Yes, I am.
You know, I'm glad to see Ken doing good. And, you know, and let me just touch on this for 1 second, and then I'll leave you alone about the Ken Kenny situation. Ken Kenny had called me and wanted me to help him get a race at Volusia. And I'll be honest with you, the main reason why I didn't do it is because I knew that I was pretty much about 85% sure that I was going to not be there. And so was Larry. Larry was going to be gone, too. And I was afraid that if we made a deal with him to have one of his races, that the people who own Volusia may back out of it by saying, you know, we didn't schedule this, you know what I mean? And a lot of people have to look at that, and I was doing that for that particular reason. I wasn't doing it not to give him a race. I was doing it because I was afraid that something would come up, and, you know, there's no Ray Miller shows for a National 8-Mile Sportsman scheduled at Volusia this year at all either, as far as I know. So, I mean, it's kind of a tough deal, and I knew if something went wrong or something not in this nature would happen, but if something could come up, they might would give Ken Kenny a call, or Ken might give them a call, and maybe they could put a race in for him later. But I'm glad to see Ken's doing good. I hit the first race at Ocala. I didn't get to make the second race. But, you know, don't get me wrong, the state of Florida needed this series, and I think it's going to be okay. Me and Joe have been talking about a modified series, a dirt modified series. So maybe with some time on my hand now, I might be able to put something like that together.
There you go, man. There you go. There's a lot of them dirt modified, too.
You know?
Yeah.
we all love racing so much. You know, there's no way you're going to stay out of it. You're going to do something.
Hey, Billy, I don't know you that well. If we're on a long-distance phone line here, I could hear the gears turning.
Oh, yeah. They're turning. I just want everybody to understand this was a huge opportunity for me. That's why I did it. The opportunity here was that I was going to go run this racetrack that needed a little help, and the goal here is not a 3-year goal, but a 5-year or a 10-year goal, and the whole goal was in 5 to 10 years to have 2 racetracks, one for Friday and one for Saturday. Like I said earlier, it's kind of like a knockdown. Am I upset about the way things went down? No, it just happened. Things happen for a reason, you know, and all you can do is move on and put your right foot forward and keep walking, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to look back at with the knowledge that I have in racing and the experience that I have in racing, I'm going to do something. Like I said, if I have to put my 3 kids out here and flag them up and down the street, that's what I'll do.
There you go, man. One thing you do is you live and you learn.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Billy. Thanks a lot for spending some time with us here. You can catch Billy on Trackside Tonight. You can catch that at, you know, if you go to TracksideTonight.com now, it goes right to your deal, man. So,
man, I'm excited. I'm glad to be home in a way, but I'm sad in a way, and the world keeps turning, and we'll move on, and I appreciate you guys having me on tonight, and I appreciate all you do for us, especially on Trackside Tonight, and all you guys do for the racing community. You guys got a hell of a show, and just keep it going. Good luck this week with the Ken Kenny Show, the Dirt Late Model Series, whatever that, United Dirt Late Model Series, and Jack Smith, stay out of trouble.
Talk to you later, man.
Y'all call me if you need me.
All right. Thanks, Billy. Bye. Billy's always a lot of fun. He'll land right on his feet, man.
Yeah, no doubt.
He'll land right on his feet.
He is an intense, to the point,
oh yeah,
get her done kind of guy.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
You got to love it. You got any more news items over there? Do you want me to take a commercial
break? Let's take a quick break.
All right. Man, I'm glad you don't smoke no more, Rick. Remember you used to smoke cigarettes, man, and you'd have to take a break. You'd be dying for a break.
Oh, no doubt, yeah.
Yeah, them days are gone, man. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Timbrink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-star Race Car Bodies. 5-star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
CarNag.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNag.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing, message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNag.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNag gets it done.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Armed with your trusty marker, you do the impossible. Make an incredibly dirty place even dirtier.
Scribble it down now.
Your jokes make us pee our pants. Lucky for us, they're down around our ankles.
Yeah!
You answer our most vexing question. Whatever happened to the man from Nantucket?
Oh, that's a good one.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh ruler of the rhyme. Because when we're looking for a good time, we call you.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Rider.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I am here.
How you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
All right, man.
Yeah, we just introduced you with Star Wars fanfare, so you welcome to Real Racing USA Live, Dennis Hoof.
I'm glad to be here.
Dennis, the Southeast Tour kicked off, and what a show it was.
Yeah, it was an interesting event. The you know, naturally, it was first race jitters and what have you that took place, but I think that series has got a great, great potential as it moves down the road.
Yeah, well,
you know, the next event coming up is one of the TV races, so I think there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm that's generated over it. But it's been a long, tough road to make sure that everything comes together, and then when you have the weather on top of everything, then makes it even tougher. But they put that together in a real short period of time, and it's done an excellent job.
Right, and we talked to who was it? We talked to
Chris Fontaine earlier.
No, I mean, who did we speak to about?
Oh, John
this?
Key.
Yeah,
yeah.
He and we had talked to him about how they were going to equalize these late models, because he said he wanted every kind of late model, frame late model, you know, whatever. He wanted them all here, and how they were going to equalize them. We talked to Chris Fontaine. And he actually ran his Craig car there at that race and finished fourth, and said the car was really moving good, and the competition is fairly even.
Yeah, that's an experiment, but it's also something that has we had a year to play with it, and that was through the ASA Midwest Tour, and Tim Olson and Mike Lemke and Steve Einhaus and the group up there have done an excellent job, and it really, that's what really started the various weights on the different types of cars, and we wanted the opportunity to make sure that a 9.5-to-1 motor could run with this, could run with that, could run with a crate, and everybody had a pretty pretty sizable interpretation of what the rule was going to be before they walked into it, and it really worked out well. And I will say the same thing about the Southeast ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour at Mobile. It showed that the rules are extremely close. And the nice part about it is you can tweak it with a little bit of weight. So it gives every category, every type of engine combination, the opportunity to run and not have just to have the one car to, you know, necessarily compete. So it was an experiment last year with the ASA Midwest Tour, and it worked out well. And the same pattern was followed with John Key and with Mickey and with Stan there on the Southeast Tour. And I'll tell you, I'm a firm believer of it because it does work, and it does give everybody an equal shot.
Yeah, I talked to Marty Zier earlier in the year earlier this year, and he was raving about that Midwest Tour. They went out there a few times and said the car counts were huge, and they just couldn't do it this year, they didn't think, because of the gas prices and stuff. But they were raving about that series out there.
And it's also a combination that's now being picked up and utilized in the ASA Northwest Tour too. So what we're seeing is something that had a lot of work put into it, and it was perfected. And I'm not the technical guy. I've listened to him talking, and you know, a lot of times I don't know the difference between a carburetor and a right rear tire. But, and of course, I'm kidding a little bit. But the issue really came down to making sure that everybody had an equal shot at it. And the one thing that was a topic of conversation, especially in the cold weather up in the Midwest, was the issue of a lighter car, especially a crate motor car, and build enough heat in the tires for qualifying. So that was one thing that they had to correct, and I believe that you know, that's all coming around to the right attitude now. And it looks like the engine combination, car combination, is a winner, and it showed itself at Mobile.
Okay, so you're the same, like myself. I don't profess to know. When I want to talk about technical things about cars, I have to have at least three or four people around to straighten me out, because I have no clue. But do you get involved in the decision-making? And if so, how do you do that? Do you get the people advise you on all the things? You make the decisions, or do other people make all these decisions?
Well, I think the smartest thing for a sanctioning body to be in the entire process of this is to make sure that you try to gather the best people and put the best people around you, so that you can hear the answers that do work. And with the setup that we have, like with the Southeast Asphalt Tour, John is the guy that has the series. We sanctioned the series for him. And he has brought in a group of people that, you know, he fully trusts, believes in. And when it comes to the technical side, he did reach out. And that's the nice part about having an overall organization like we have, is that we could tap into different areas. And that's where the ASA Midwest Tour came into play and into focus. Because Mike Lemke up there has done an excellent job, along with Tim Olson, in making sure that they looked at every combination. And if there was a problem, which there were a couple of problems early on, to be able to make that decision and make it fairly quickly to hopefully make those competitors all know that they all had a shot. And every combination won last year up in the ASA Midwest Tour, and I think that the same thing is, you know, it's got the potential in the ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour and even in the ASA Northwest Tour. There just seems to be enough brain power amongst all three of the tours, and they talk quite a bit, that they can make it work and make sure that it's, you know, if there is a problem, there is an issue, everybody talks.
And what a great sponsorship, RC Cole and Moon Pie.
It's perfect.
It is absolutely perfect.
It is. In fact, I know you guys know, but I was down at DeSoto Speedway. They've signed on as an ASA member track. And
Rick doesn't know anything about DeSoto Speedway. You'll have to.
Well, John and I were talking. In fact, the drivers' meeting was just getting ready to start, and that was the day that the announcement was going to go out about RC and Moon Pie. And of course, there's a group of drivers, and they were sitting in the golf cart, and some of the others that were inside the shed there, because it was a fairly warm day. And I looked over, and I said, John, did you hear about the sponsorship that's going to be announced on the ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour? And he said, no. And I said, it probably won't mean much to you. Of course, he's up from, I think, upstate New York. Is that right?
He's from the island.
From the island.
He's from the island.
So
I worked for him for 5.5 years.
There you go. So we're having a conversation about this potential sponsor, and I held off as long as I possibly could. And I could tell by the guys that were sitting there, they were going to know what I was talking about. And when I mentioned RC and Moon Pie, John looked at me with this puzzled look on his face, and I saw about 5 drivers go, wow, that's perfect. That's perfect. I eat them all the time. Or, you know, I used to, I grew up with them.
Yep.
And John just looked at me and says, what in the heck is that? So he went on to, the explanation of the whole thing. And he realized, because I guess up on the island there was a product that was fairly close to it. But, it is a perfect sponsorship. John Key has really put his marketing powers into play, and you know his years at Nestle Corporation and dealing with the various sponsorships that are out there, he's done a great job with it. And there's some new sponsors that are coming out on board, and you got to be proud of him because he is putting his mouth right there on there's money where his mouth is, and doing everything he possibly can to make sure that tour has the mystique about it. And it steps, the forefront. And
well, he certainly
TV is going to help too.
Yeah, he certainly. When we had him on our show, there was no, he impressed us with the fact that he definitely was a marketing guy and a promotion guy, and he knew what he was doing. And now you were talking about John and the being down at DeSoto. They recently became a ASA member, part of the member track program. Okay, so if I have a racetrack out in somewhere in America here in a short track. Asphalt or dirt, why should I, what benefit is it to us to come on board with you and be a part of the member track program?
Well, actually, the best way to answer that is if you're going to be a track operator, my first question to you would be, if you're a dirt or you're an asphalt track, what do you need? What is it you really need from an organization to come in and try to help you out? Now, the first thing that most people would say is, I need cash. Give me cash and I'm happy. But really the bottom line is what a track operator has to expend to keep the racetrack open. Whether it be, advertising or whether it be his insurance, whether it be the help that's at the racetrack or what he has to buy to, a scoring system or what have you. What we attempt to do is we attempt to get involved in as much as we possibly can with a track operator on saving money. Because the big thing that seems to be the big ticket items right now seem to be insurance for a track. Of course, the payments on the track itself if they don't own it. Prize money is a big issue. But the things that we can help with, what they're going to purchase, like an A&B scoring system, we have a great deal with them. We have, the various buys that we can get for them from a trophy company to the banners that are put up in the back straightaway to anything that you're dealing with at a racetrack, we can normally put a group together and we can buy it a lot cheaper because of numbers. Now, the big issue for me has always been, last time I was on the program we talked about it a little bit, but big thing for me has always been the insurance package, because most competitors, when they walk into a track, they really don't understand what kind of insurance policy they have on them, and maybe at some racetracks it would probably scare them just because of the coverage that may or may not be there. So the one thing that I required and do require the racetracks that we're involved with is to come up with an extremely good insurance package to make sure that everybody has a good solid coverage over the top of them. And it's a minimum of $50,000 for some of the level 2 tracks, but the level 1 tracks, like what John has signed up for, his competitors have $500,000 worth of participant accident coverage on them. And that most competitors, in that at least that I have met, have always said, well, gee, that's insurance. What do I need it for? You know, I'm really not worried about that right now. I need a new widget on my car. Or I need a, you know, a new set of tires or what have you. But in all the years that I've been around it, it when the accident hits, because this is a dangerous sport, it's the last thing to be thought of, but it's the first thing to be thought of at that point in time. And I've stood next to too many people, and, you know, if the insurance coverage wasn't there, then all of a sudden you see a lifestyle change. And if it's a $25,000 medical bill and there's only $5,000 worth of coverage at the racetrack, then, you know, there's money that's short. So that's the one thing that I really, really push hard within the ASA member track programs, to make sure that the insurance and the coverage that we have is the best for the drivers, and it's also the best for the track operator. But beyond that, we push as hard as we can to take the national exposure. We work as hard as we can to take a lot of the drivers and put them in the forefront. You know, an example of that would be our ASA National Championship package right now. You know, the winner of that ASA National Championship is going to be taking a test ride with Gibbs, and you know, I mean, I know that I've been involved in a lot of promotions over the years, all my years at NASCAR and what have you, but this probably has coming back at me the most excitement that I've heard in a long time, and that is the opportunity to do a test ride with Gibbs. And, you know, sponsored by the Driven brand, by Gibbs Oil. Stuff like that can help build a racetrack, can help build a fan base, can help build a car count, and can do a lot of things for a racetrack to put them on the map. And that's what we're attempting to do, is to make sure that we take a racetrack that's doing well, because we look for the better racetracks that are out there, and try to take and build a little bit more professionalism into it, try to take it and move it up a notch, because we'll bring the official shirts to the racetrack. We'll bring the, you know, the banners. We'll get the decals. We'll do everything we possibly can to help that track operator save money, but also build the racetrack to a star quality and to put it on the map in the United States and to make it a better facility to look at, or something that's a household name, or, you know, or what have you. Because a lot of these competitors, as we all know, some of them want to stay at a local track. You know, they want to,
sure,
want to drive a street stock, or they want to drive a late model, and they want to stay there the rest of their lives. And that's fine. If we can give them the notoriety and build on that ego a little bit, then he's happy, or she's happy. Some of the guys that want to move on to a tour, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we have the 11 tours that we've got out there, because they're all different. They're all different shapes and sizes. And, you know, there's a road racing series, there's a sprint car series, dirt sprint car series. Those are done purposely to make sure that it gives the guys that want to move from the weekly track a chance to move up into the touring series, and eventually, if they want to move up into the Camping World series for NASCAR or whatever, the opportunity's there for them. So, getting back to your question, what is the reason that you would join on with the ASA member track program would be the same questions that I would ask you. How can we help you?
Gotcha.
What can we do for you to help you out? And the examples that are out there, I mean, we could take a couple hours on this show.
Sure.
Oh, various things that are, you know, that are done. But it really comes down to trying to help the track operator out, to be available 24/7. And if somebody is, you know, they're having an area of concern, or they've got an issue or what have you, then maybe we can help them out because somebody else has been through it. And if there's some TV coverage they want, or if there's, well, we had three racetracks that wanted to get scoreboards. And individually, those scoreboards were going to cost them, I think, in the neighborhood of about $28,000. So we went out and helped them cut a deal, all three of them, and they bought them for $17,000 apiece.
There you go.
So, you know, it's the behind-the-scenes stuff that really works. We got a racetrack called us today from Virginia, and they... It was quite a compliment because they said, we heard you have the best insurance policy in the land right now. And we said, yeah, we feel pretty good about it. And we'll get WSIB and Chubb as underwriters for the policy. And it's, I mean, it's A1. It's top of the line policy. And they said, well, our purpose for calling is we're not happy with what we've got now, but we want to be part of a bigger organization. And when the insurance came up, we trust you. So we've sent off the information to them, and they'll probably end up an ASA member track within the next week. And it all comes down to word of mouth and how we can help them out, because they had some particular interests that, you know, can we help them get certain items? Sure. We've got the connection for it, and it's easy to do. So it's really a service for, you know, for any track operator out there.
And you have 11 tours and 35 tracks or so. How big do you think you're going to you want to take this? How big are you going to go?
Well, let's see. If we sit still, I think we're going backwards. But in this particular instance, I think we have to let the water kind of level itself every year.
Yeah.
I don't want to grow it to a point so quickly that it's unmanageable.
Yeah.
And also want to make sure that it remains a family, because right now I really do consider the competitors and the track operators that we deal with as a pretty sizable family. And the the issues that I think we all can get into is we be entrepreneurial and try to take things a little bit too fast, is we lose sight of that. And that's the one thing I don't want to do. I want to make sure that the member tracks that are, you know, that we can help them all out at one particular time or another. And as the staffing grows, as we grow, then we'll take it one step at a time. I mean, you know, 3 years ago, when we had, seven member tracks on board, I never would have thought that we would have hit the 35 tracks that we've got now in such a short period of time. But it really does come down to making sure that everybody that we deal with has, you know, that they can take a little piece out of it. And of course, we're going to lose some tracks. We're going to have some tracks that change hands. And, you know, the short track industry is changing so rapidly right now. And it used to be track operator would stay in a track for, I think it was an average of 5.3 years, if I remember right. And now that's down to like 2.5 years.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of people had the stars in the eyes that they saw what was happening on TV, and, you know, you look at a cup race and you see all the people in the grandstand, and they say, "Oh, I'm gonna get my own, and I'm gonna go ahead and promote it."
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is the fault of all of us, so to speak, because we did rest on our laurels, and I include myself too, because it's, you know, for a while there were great crowds. And everything was flying pretty high. And then as the economy shifted and the entertainment dollars start shifting and the kids start staying home and, you know, working with the internet and some of the various patterns that changed in family life, I don't know if we changed with it there for a while. I do know that it's pretty encouraging, because most of the racetracks that have opened, and I say most, that I've talked to this year have told me that their crowds are at least equal, and most of them are up a percentage, and some of them up a good percentage. Because I had the conversation with one of the tracks today, and I shared with them that my best 2 years of promoting racetracks, which I did, I promoted tracks for about 18 years, and a lot of them on the West Coast of the United States, but my best years that I can remember, one was the year of the gas shortage, and the other year was the year of Jimmy Carter's 18.5% interest that, you know, that we all lived with. So people weren't buying those big ticket items. We're seeing that now. They're not buying homes. We know that in Florida.
You know that's for
absolutely.
Fact.
And you know, the trucks and the cars and I mean, you read it every day that the big ticket items are not being bought. So with that happening, people are still going to do something. And they've got the ancillary dollars. They're just not going to spend it on the big items. And we're starting to see that within a 25 to 35 mile radius around a racetrack, that people are starting to migrate back to the tracks. And not a dig to NASCAR, because I think that their TV package is fantastic. But if you look at the grandstands now, and a lot of the cup races, you're starting to see some empty seats. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with people traveling. You know, the cost of the tickets and all that. Well, you look at a weekly short track, you know, the cost to get in is between $10 and $15 on a normal night. That's cheap entertainment. and you can take your kids. You know, you can do the things that you might be able to do years and years ago with a Grand National race or whatever. And so I think that the potential is there for the short track industry to go back into an upswing on a secular pace, maybe on a 3-year cycle or what have you. And it's really going to just be to make sure that the track operators are, you know, they're rolling up their sleeves.
Putting on some entertainment.
No doubt. That's what it's all about, right?
That's right. Exactly. And that's one of the things that we're doing even with the national championship, is that the system that we have is more of a batting average. And one of the criteria, one of the factors, major factors, is the amount of cars that someone passes at a racetrack. And, you know, it's, of course, it's how many wins they've got, how many cars they're racing against, how many nights they race. But the big factor is how many cars they pass, and it's going to take place during the course of the season. So it's, you know, it's trying to get back to basics, putting on a show, and it is entertainment.
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, the Southeast Tour has gotten a great kickoff with 36 cars showing up for their first race. Of course, we're looking for them, looking forward to them coming to Lakeland. The RC Cola Moon Pie ASA Southeast Late Model Tour. What a great name. I just love that name.
You know, when you think about it, it's I keep hearing it is a tradition. And stock car racing is a tradition.
Yeah.
So I don't know which one of you said it, but it is a perfect match.
Oh, no doubt. And signing John Sabracone at DeSoto Super Speedway, man, that's great, too. That track needs a little boost. I was out there this past weekend, had a great crowd, good car count, good late model race. So things are looking up out there, too.
Well, I was at East Bay on Saturday night. They had a great crowd. They had 31 late models.
Right.
You know, it's...
they got a great program for late models there.
They really do.
Yeah.
That's actually a good mixture of that as you were talking about with the open motor and the crate motor and you know and how they work. And of course, the dirt is such a great equalizer. Anyway.
No doubt.
Yeah.
But no,
we have to be up there this weekend. As a matter of fact, I wanted to go to Waterman on Capitol, but we have to go to East Bay to cover the United Dirt Late Model Series race there at East Bay Raceway this weekend. So
we will miss you at Cordele then.
But we'll catch up at Lakeland, no doubt.
Oh, really?
Oh, I love Cordele. You know, I was up there the last year. I was up there, and I was amazing. You know, you get in the car and you just drive around in the country. It's amazing what you see around the racetrack. You know, and that old town there. I mean, those towns have been there for a long, long time, man. It's old Georgia.
Would you say a southern tradition?
You think? Yeah, it's pretty cool, pretty cool. But thanks a lot for stopping by with us, and we're going to be hooking up, I think, with John Key again real soon. We're going to talk to some more of the drivers from the Southeast Asphalt Tour because, I mean, you had 36 cars there, and it deserves some attention.
Well, it does deserve some attention. I think the ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour and the Moon Pie RC connection is, you know, it's one of those things that's going to stick. You know, it's new enough now where everybody, you kind of, it's a mouthful at times. But I guess a moon pie is a mouthful at times, so isn't it? But the thing that you get used to is the amount of energy that goes into all these tours, and that tour especially, because it is brand new. And people are, you know, I don't know what you expect out of it, but it had its first race. It had 36 cars. And, you know, that Mobile racetrack is not a slow racetrack. It's a pretty lightning quick track, and to have something happen there, it's going to happen quick. So, and with the TV that's coming on board now, and with Rick Benjamin behind that, and John Key doing what he is doing with that series, I'll tell you, as I opened up the show with, I've got great expectations for them. I mean, they've got all the offerings of a winner. And that thing is—it's going to be entertaining for a lot of fans throughout this summer, and I think with the competition that's there now and the competition that will join up, some of the names that are talking about coming on board, it just adds to the whole thing. So it's entertainment, and that's what it's going to. Well, I think it's going to continue to do is help entertain people in the Southeast.
All right. Dennis, thanks a lot for being with us tonight, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Gentlemen, I appreciate it, and I will talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Dennis Huth. owner of the American Speed Association.
He's always got plenty to say, that's for sure. Quick shout out to Mike Peters out there listening to us tonight. 10 days, Mike. The ASCS Sprint Car is going to be up there at Ocala Speedway.
Oh, Dirty Mike.
Dirty Mike.
It is funny, though, man. It's amazing what the transformation.
That's exactly what I was going to say, the transformation. That first race we had up there with the Night of Dirt Late Model Challenge Series, looking forward. First PAL Memorial on the dirt, June the 6th, 100 lapper.
We're going to come back here with one of racing's more interesting promoters, Mr. Don Nerone.
Interesting promoter I've ever had the opportunity to sit down with.
He'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Timbrink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-star race car bodies. 5-star race car bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-star race bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing, message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Okay, Real Racing USA Live is back. And we got the Don of Florida Stock Car Racing with us right now, Don Nerone. Don, how you doing tonight?
Doing just fine.
Don, you unpacked your suitcase, and now you got your own track. Again, is this an adventure that you're up for now?
Well, I guess I am. You know, if you look at my career, it's probably all I've ever done, so it's not like a new idea to me. It's what I do. And I've always really enjoyed this racetrack up here, and it's really laid back, and the people are real nice. Heck, every time I ever came up here, I didn't want to go home, so I might as well just stay.
And that Columbia Motorsports Park is right near Lake City, Florida, near 75 and I-10 up there in North Florida, for folks that don't know. And so, Don, you took it over about a month ago. What kind of things you got going on or changes you're already implementing up there?
Well, there's some questions for you. Well, let me see. I've got so many of them, I'm not going to list them all out.
Well, I heard you were turning it into a dirt track.
Yeah, I fell for that one.
Yeah, we're going to turn part of the infield into an 8-mile go-kart track, start for the kids, and start doing some Friday night go-kart racing up here, which is one of the trends in the area. They don't have a go-kart track anywhere real close by. Starting to do some other crazy promotions, you know. You got to realize this racetrack is in an area where it doesn't impact much of anybody in the asphalt racing business. The nearest place, I guess, is Bronson. It's a little racetrack. As far as big racetracks, there's one in Georgia, but these people don't travel around too much. It's kind of just a little local stock car track. It's a little behind its time, and I love it that way.
You know, I when you talk to the guys that really go fast, like the super late model guys and the sprint car guys, they absolutely love that racetrack.
It's a side-by-side racetrack. Of all the big racetracks, it's the one place where lead follower get out of the way. You see a lot of passing here. The weekly divisions here, you know, our car count's real small. There's not a whole lot of cars up here, but they're all competitive. They all run together all the time. The racetracks makes cars competitive.
Right, and I talked to a guy, Jim, down here that hangs around with John down here at DeSoto, and He was telling me about when that track was built. I mean, they literally were out there with a plane making sure that it was completely level.
I don't know about that.
So what's it like, Don, now that you got the Tour Series and you're running a racetrack?
I'm in heaven. I've only got one racetrack to run instead of three, so actually there's less work for me to do. I used to run all three of them and the Tour, and it just got so hectic that you really can't get anything done, and you just get behind and get frustrated, and now it's easier for me to focus on the stuff that I'm doing. We've got some new short track ideas that nobody's ever heard of before that you know, we sit around and try to think up new ideas. So many things I see everybody doing, I already tried years ago as time went, and we find new things. Well, come on, somebody think up something new. Well, Tim came up with a great idea. We're actually going to raise the purse here. We're going to raise the purse substantially, I hope, a cash register race. You ever hear of such a thing?
No, not familiar with it.
Cha-ching.
A cash register? What is that? You know, there's actually two cash registers at the front ticket booth. And when you come into the racetrack, you're going to be voting for your favorite race car. I'm coming for Tom Jones, the 06. That means Tom Jones went out and found some fans and brought them to the racetrack. Come watch me race. And $2 of every ticket that he gets to come to the racetrack goes back into his race car, not into the purse total, but that individual race car. Next week when he comes, an envelope at the back gate for how many fans he brought. It's called sharing the front gate. You know, you could have a guy, we run a class of six-cylinder front-wheel drive cars here called Hornets, and they race for a trophy. The last place guy could see would make $100. There's a new idea.
And that's a way to bring fans to the stands.
Poor Bobby Deal. He didn't think of that one.
Yeah, well, the minute he hears about it, he might be putting it in. You never know.
I'm sure he will. But that was a really neat idea. That was one that the boys came up with, and I thought it kind of had some merit. We're also going to go to work on, you know, we have the class of cars in the state. We're actually going to change a little bit of that around. We're going to try to re-engineer the wheel. We're going to start with one class, probably going to be old wheel modified, and we're going to go back to economy racing, econo mods, which is what they were when they originally started. It was a great thing. There were plenty of cars around, and everybody enjoyed doing it. One at a time, the promoters changed one rule until they got them to where it's a pretty expensive class. We're going to try to go back to what they used to be.
Give us an idea of that. Give me an idea, Don. What's the deal? Like how inexpensive can you get the modifieds?
I get them inexpensive enough. Well, it's in a theory. The theory is everybody's already got race cars out there. Well, keep the race car you got. Everybody's spending money on motors, and we're just going to take all the money out of the motor. And to guarantee that we take the money out of the motor, and I'm talking about a real inexpensive motor, I'm going to take a guess, make a number, $2,000 motor you modified. And every week to your race, we're going to draw a number out of the hat, and you're going to take yours out and take the one that's on the floor. And then I'm going to take the one I took out. It's on the floor. And every week, somebody, first place, last place, we don't care who it is, gets a motor. It only takes about 15 minutes to get one out of those things, the way we're going to do it. So if you want to cheat up your motor, cheat it up all you want to because your friend's going to get to run it. You won't.
Okay.
So you're going to cheat your motor up so your competitor can have it? Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, if anything you could do to get, like if you get 15 modifieds, I mean, that would be a lot more than you have now. And if you had 15 modifieds out there every week or so at Columbia Motorsports Park, that'd add one hell of a show quality to the show, no doubt.
That's exactly what we have in mind. I'm going to design a body form that's made out of three pieces of aluminum and one piece of Lexan. I'm going to draw it out on a piece of paper for them and say, here it is. You can cut that metal any way you want. Here's how much metal you get to use. Three sheets of aluminum, one sheet of Lexan.
Is he pulling our leg? Is he pulling our leg because it's April Fool's Day?
It don't sound like it.
Okay.
Of course, it's hard to tell with Don.
That's funny.
So are you going to change the basic modifieds, like, you know, the Jimmy Cope cars and the other cars?
No,
or?
No, that's exactly what you can use.
Yeah?
Have them on the most inexpensive racing tire we can put them on, and have them on the cheapest absolute motor that we can get, and the cheapest carburetor, and the cheapest distributor, and I'm talking about as inexpensive as we can build the things.
And the way that the modifieds that started out.
The way the modifieds started out. They start out with a $350 engine claim. And people actually claim them. And people actually built, you know, cheap motors.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to make up a set of rules for a truly cheap motor. And they have a new way of policing it. And the second thing is, man, if you cheat it up, your buddy's going to be running it. You're not going to get to keep it. If you're really a good driver, and you got a good car, you can come out and win some races. If you want to come have fun, you can do that too, and nobody's going to spend any money at it. I don't care how much money you spend when we get little motors and like treaded street stock tires on them. Everybody can compete.
There you go.
Will that bring them back out of the garages? I hope so. Is it going to bring is this something that's going to be going after the pro mod idea? Absolutely not. Those guys have got good cars, they're good racers, and they've got their program. I'm happy with that too. But what about the little guy? What's a little guy get for a race car? There's only about two choices. He's either got a Southern Sportsman or like an Econo-Mod. Those are the two cars of the future, in my opinion.
And there is plenty of modified sitting in garages right now.
Oh yeah,
there's a ton of them.
Well, you know, we talked to on Inside Florida Racing last night, Don. We talked with Mike Bresnahan, who built himself a dirt car. And when Rob Elting asked him how much he had in it, he didn't tell us, but he said it was less than 25. He said he had about, I'm not mistaken, he said he had around 5 in the motor, something like that. And, you know, that's, he went out and won a race in that his first time out. But here he is running a dirt late model, and there's guys out there running Sportsman and asphalt that are spending more money than that.
Realize something about you asked the wrong guy. Mike Bresnahan ran the same motor 9 years.
Right.
In his super late model. If somebody thinks that was a high dollar team, you're wrong. He didn't have any of the race cars that he used that he won most of those races with for all the years. It was an old car back from the early 80s.
Sure.
He's never spent any money on his racing. He doesn't have any.
So
he didn't have a whole lot of money, big sponsors. He didn't have any money to spend.
Yeah, so, but he's still, the point is he's still looking. And there's a lot of guys like Mike, and they're still looking for ways to make it more affordable so they can stay in it because they have to satisfy mom.
There's so few people around like Mike, guys that can take nothing and win races. I mean, there's not a whole lot of them around. I mean, real, real low-budget teams that are very competitive when they show up. Tommy, the 77 car, super late model, there's another one. He doesn't spend a lot of money on that race car, and it's competitive when it comes to racetrack. But when you race against Mike Bresnahan, you had your hands full. The guy always ran up front. He's one of my heroes. That's as good a racer as I've ever known.
Yeah, Mike, and Mike can put it up, pick him up and put him down just about any racetrack here in the state.
Yeah, and any way you want to go about it. Now let's talk about dirt. Well, that was his first experience of dirt. How'd he do?
He won.
Yeah.
He won. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect Friday night for a Sunbelt race.
I don't know. I guess we're going to have a Sunbelt race Friday night at Orlando Speed World, and I'm sure it's going to be a good one, no doubt in my mind. I expect about 20 cars there, which is about the normal for Orlando. Orlando's so round, it's so fast, that's probably the toughest place in Florida to race right now, especially with a super late model, because you carry so much turn speed. Although there's plenty of traction, the racetrack's good and smooth, when something happens, it's just hard to miss it.
Just because you've got so much momentum built up.
Yeah, you're coming off of turn four, and somebody wrecks in turn one. You're in turn one before you know it. The whole straightaway to see the wreck and try to find somebody not to be in it. When they put the apron around the bottom of that racetrack, that helped a bunch. They had to put the apron in, that saved a lot of race cars' places to hide, but I think we'll have a bang-up show.
Well, hopefully it ain't bang up, but it should be a good race.
Saturday night, Columbia's going to have the Goodyear Challenge, and all the boys from Miami are coming. I've been talking to them. got a bunch of teams coming for that deal. That's going to be a heck of a show here. They always put on a good show here.
Yeah, you know, Jessica Murphy's going to win one of them races here real soon.
You want to bet on this one?
What do you think?
I can't bet on my own races, doggone it. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah.
If she got a good chance anyway to win. The car that she's driving actually won here last year. That's a good start. That's actually Burkhalter's old car. And that car actually won here last year. She got Dick Cruen and Burkhalter both helping her crew it, so she's plenty fast. If they can just if they can keep her head right, she's going to win some races.
Now, isn't this the first time? I mean, you're really hands on here now. This isn't like you're not working through other general managers. You're being the general manager. You're running the track. It's your baby. Isn't this a little different now than what you were doing before? And I mean, it's been a while since you actually had this role, isn't it?
I think 12 years now, or maybe a little longer than that, 10, 11, 12. Maybe 12 years ago since I actually was responsible totally for a racetrack as an entity. Yeah. Although, for the first couple of years, working for Robert, I did do that in Orlando. About 2 years in Orlando, I just did nothing when I hired on there. I did nothing but work on the Sunbelt Tour and Orlando Speed Roll. I didn't have anything to do with New Smyrna for about 2 years. And so it's really not that long, but it's always the same. It's great. It's a great feeling. It's a lot of fun, a lot of heartache, a lot of work. But we're starting to get the place to look a little better. And yeah, I'm cutting grass and riding around on a loader and driving a backhoe and run off in the office, try to get the work done, and try to do all things, be all things to all people, and I enjoy every minute of it.
All right, now we
for me to do one racetrack like this.
Yes,
actually, like retirement.
Now, you said a couple of years ago you were going to retire. You're not retiring.
Right here. This is retirement. At my 60th birthday, two more years, I'm retired. Right up here in Lake City, I'll be out sitting out here on the porch watching Jack mow the grass.
So, what is the absolute latest in the Motor Wars situation?
Well, let me see. They dynoed, they went to McGonigal's shop, who builds the motor in the north, and they took one of our motors and his motor. Jack Lannis took his over there and stood by, and they dynoed both of them. The strangest thing happens, and I couldn't imagine how this happens. Theirs dynoed almost 600. Well, that's what ours dynos here. But ours dynoed 650, 640 something. So there was almost 50 horsepower difference between the two. Now, here on our dyno, ours dynoed 600, and theirs dynoed about 45 horse less than that. So in reality, there's not a problem. They actually both dynoed the same difference as they did here. They just dynoed 50 horsepower more. Those are engine builders. You can adjust a dyno. There's not a sure thing. You can adjust a dyno, get outside the specs of it, make a motor read anything you want to make it read. You make a 600 horsepower motor read 700. But we're not going to argue the point. The point is that they both dynoed the same as they would here in difference. It's about 45 horsepower. And the reason for that is, one thing, they've got a hydraulic camshaft there, which is limiting the horsepower a little bit. So ours is a little better than theirs. Here's the sad part of it all. Everybody, you hear nothing but talking about putting chips in these motors. Isn't that the big deal?
Right.
Don should put a chip in his motor?
That's a big deal.
If they come up north and want to run, they got to put a chip in them? Well, put a chip in them. 7,400 RPM, mine quit making horsepower. The spec motor that Fast Car runs is 7,400 RPM, just quit making horsepower. Now, there's guys that turn them 8,200, but it doesn't do any good. If you turn a McGonigal motor 8,200, it would blow up. It would have long been blown up. About 7,600, it gives up valve springs and stuff starts jumping out of it. But in reality, if you take their price sheet of the parts they have and our price sheet for the parts that we have spent $2,000 more on internal parts so that it won't blow up that they didn't spend because they put a rev limiter in it to keep it from blowing up. In reality, that means they're making $2,000 more a motor than we do. You're buying less of a product for more money so they can put a chip in and stop it from blowing up. So their idea of a chip isn't exactly the right idea, is it?
What, isn't that what they want to limit it to, 7,400 RPM anyway?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the big deal? I just don't get it.
Well, what I don't get at all, this started out in the Snowball Derby, and you know, they've never really tested one of our motors, even seen it run or ever let one run. They came out with this deal because somebody told them, well, they're dominating all the races in Florida with these motors. Well, I guess they are. When eight out of the top 10 teams have got one, I guess they're going to win most of the races, aren't they?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Didn't Wayne?
If you go to a Sunbelt race, there's 15 spec motors there. There's 2 9-to-1s and 2 steelheaded motors. Guess who's going to win the races?
So, like, Wayne Anderson just recently ran at New Smyrna in the Bright House Challenge Series. If I'm not mistaken, he was, like, really fast, maybe fast time even. And I think he finished second.
Finished second in the race.
To Tim
Russell.
Tim Russell.
With a McGonagall motor, yeah.
Maybe we ought to get you and Wayne Anderson on the show one night together to just, like, get to the bottom of this.
I'd love to.
I think that would be a good idea.
He's on the warpath telling everybody in the world about how unfair our motors are. He doesn't have one.
Yet he finished second with his.
He finished second with the McGonagall.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, I just can't, you know, all these guys we've talked to over the time, and, you know, we sat down and talked there for a little bit, and their whole deal was, you know, wanting to chip it at 7,400. Well, damn, the damn thing stops making horsepower at 7,400. Go ahead.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, they say, well, so what's the deal? Put a chip in it.
So put a chip in it to race up north, right?
Put a chip in to race up north. I don't care.
Yeah, well, I don't understand.
Don't put a chip in McGonagall when you race down here. I don't care.
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy up.
Here's the thing. Here's
go
the
ahead.
Part about this. All this has been going on and has kept going on. The McGonagall motor that they're running up there and the motor that we run were both engineered within the same 30 days. And the theory of both of them, how they're built, is exactly the same. We didn't know they were doing it. They didn't know we were doing it. So we came up with the same idea, the same theory at the same time, and all of a sudden mine's supposed to be bad and theirs is supposed to be good. Well, here's a game for you. Why would I care any way, shape, or form? Because I don't make one nickel on our motors. It's not a financial thing for me. I don't get paid if you buy more of them. I just get more race cars. Why would I care if the very first one of my motors ever went to Indianapolis and ran or to Pensacola and ran? I should think that I don't want them to go there. The average promoter would say, I don't want my cars to go up there and make them illegal. So try this out. If anybody's listening from up there, please make all my motors up there illegal. You know what I mean?
Trust me, they are listening.
Go up there. Please, all my motors must be illegal in Indianapolis and in Pensacola and Alabama. Oh, by the way, the McGonagall motor is legal here. Please come down and race with us. We need cars in Florida.
And I mean, that's what doesn't make sense to me. All their motors from up there can come down here and
Rick,
run.
Rick, you know what we're
going
to
have to do. But they're so afraid of our motors.
Rick, we are going to have to hire our own motor expert here. That's all I can say.
Yeah, but do you remember a few years ago
you don't need a motor expert. Here's what happens. About 5 years ago, they said the reason that people don't come down up north is because they can't win. Well, why can't they win? Well, your bodies are different.
Right.
A whole new thing was created called ABC Body, an organization to make all the bodies the same. That'll get them to come down here. Well, there wouldn't very many more come. And when they did come, they got their butts kicked and went home. Okay, that didn't work. Well, you know what's wrong? It's the rules. The rules down there are so much different. I said, okay, tell you what we'll do. Run the north-south race, we use your rules. Matter of fact, we use your tech guys. You tech the cars. You can tech my cars, and I don't even look at yours. And they still got their butts kicked. Then they came back and said, well, it's this tire thing. Your guys are soaking tires and cheap. We'll stop. I guarantee I can stop that. We went to the tire impound completely, right down to the minute before the race. They still got their butts kicked. Now it's going to be something new. Now it's going to be the motor again. Now we go back to this motor realized when this whole thing started, everybody was running 9-to-1 steel-headed motors. The Fords that Fritz were running, he was wearing them out, the dyno are a bunch, 50 horsepower better than mine. I had ours built in the middle. I wanted a dyno the same as a 9-to-1. Didn't have to be as good as a Ford, and it is right where it's at. The point is that we race at these racetracks so many times in a year. There's so much racing going on down here over a longer period of time. These guys got their stuff together. Now, when Ben Rowe comes down here, and that Rowe bunch, now they're on the game, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Ain't no problem there because they race hard up there, too.
The Hoffman crew is, too.
You saw the car that ran second in the Speedfest?
Right.
Eddie's on it, man. Eddie Hoffman's definitely on it.
That was a McGonagall motor. They ran second. And when we took it apart to check it, we could PNG and whistle it. We took the valve spring parts out of the valley. It was only run on 7 cylinders.
Oh. Damn.
It's not the motor. It's a combination of everything that makes a race car fast. If a motor to make a race car fast, everybody just have a motor. It ain't the motor. It's the excuse. Today, the motor's the excuse. That's all it is. A good race car will go fast and take one spark plug off of it.
You can't put a chip in the helmet.
Wayne Anderson took a motor out of his car that was probably with dyno, I'm going to guess, 6 on our dyno, 640 or 650 in ours dyno, 600. I bet you his 9-to-1 on the dyno was at least 40 horsepower better than ours, and he put one in, it was 50 horsepower less than ours and ran second. Now, he hasn't run up front with his 9-to-1. He's been back farther back than second. You scratch your head and you say, no, wait a minute, what's that all about? These motors that we're using have a real heavy crankshaft, and so does the McGonagall. It's like built-in traction control. The motor doesn't want to spin the tires. It wants to go faster down the straightaway, don't want to spin the tires. You talk to all these guys, say, well, you know what? What about just putting a heavy crankshaft in your other motor? Well, that's blasphemy. We know that won't work. But that's basically all it is.
Yeah.
It's the horsepower curve and the amount of torque it makes. It makes a ton of torque. And it's not strong off the bottom.
Well, there you go.
And it's idiot proof, and it cost $16,000 for one of those. What's a 9-to-1 cost? Daryl Sheldon's dad. I'm gonna speak for him. He'd probably get mad at me for talking about him. We're standing there talking yesterday, and they got a steel-headed motor. They just had it rebuilt. I said, "What? You know, I hate them spec motors." Oh. You run any kind you want. It's open for whatever you want to get. But what it costs you to rebuild your steel-headed motor, it's more than it costs to buy a spec motor. The reason there's so many of them out there isn't because they were so much better. People bought them because, you know, Finney, he had a 9-to-1 that he had just gotten freshened up. The guy charging $16,000 to freshen it, and it just didn't run good. You got a broken motor? A 9-to-1, and somebody wants $38,000 for a 9-to-1, and you had a race car, what would you do? There's no doubt. You buy one for 16, and they're not breaking them. That's the right one to have.
Well, like Jeff Choquette said.
Trouble to build a program that made it so you could keep what you got, and when what you got was broke, you'd probably buy one of these and try to keep everybody equal playing field, and that's what we did. And nobody thought anything of it until all of a sudden everybody started breaking their stuff and started buying them. Now it's like you can't win without one. Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, like Choquette said, you know, with his progressive motor, his spec motor, he said he'd be willing for anybody to pull the motor out of his car and put a new spec motor in, and he'll trade motors with him, and he has all the confidence in the world.
And I've had six race car drivers now, count them, I've had six, tell me he says that, but he wouldn't do it.
All right, let me try this out for you. Tell all six of them.
Okay.
Go to Timmy Russell's car.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the other car you were just talking about.
Jeff Choquette.
Go to Dick Anderson's car. Go to David Rogers' car. Go to anybody that I have that wins a race with a spec motor, okay? And I promise you he'll trade. Not maybe, not he was just talking. Don Narone said. He will trade. He will trade. Because if he won't trade for a new one, then he must be cheating. I'll take it apart in 1,000 pieces. Give it back. Every one of them buys one knows when they get it okay, that any time I want to trade it, I will, and they're all for it. They said, I don't want you to trade me some piece of junk somebody's wore out. I said, I agree with that completely.
So, okay,
so you go buy a brand new one from any one of the three engine builders and show up at the racetrack and say, I want that one. It's yours. Not just your kids. Any one of them you want, you pick it.
Okay, there you have it.
And Don Narone said.
And Don Narone said so.
Yep.
All right, Don, I'll tell you what, we'll get in touch with Wayne here in the next week or so, a couple of weeks, and we'll follow this thing, because I'll tell you, this is being talked about all over the South, Midwest, wherever. I mean, this is a big topic, and we'll get with Wayne, see what he has to say about it.
I'll bring you some more. You ought to get the bunch of some, one of the boys in Georgia to come along on this game, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of neat things going on up through there that kind of got out of hand. The whole idea of sealed motors, crate motors, it was a great idea in its concept. But I'm getting a little nervous about it now because it looks like our Chevrolet crate motor program ain't too good. Everybody's playing with them. Now we got to go back through that program. That's why I wasn't so for it to start with, because there's it's doggone hard to tech. But now what we're doing, and forewarned, if you listen to the radio and you have a Chevrolet crate motor, okay, we've bought a whole big old box of tools to start working on those things to make sure that they're right. Think about that one. You remember hearing all that when this whole thing started, how cheap they are, right? Well, if you don't spend $10,000 on one of those, you ain't got nothing. And that's got to stop. We got to stop at the trucks. You need to stop in the late models if you're going to supposedly have a 450 horsepower crate motor in there, and you take a weight rate for it. That's what you should have in there.
There
or you fall prey to Don's auction house.
Don's auction house.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you think of a better way of policing it? I'm for it.
That sounds good to me.
The trading them is a great thing. That's a great police thing right there. That's why that's actually verbally in our rule program that says we will trade them.
There you go.
And I promise you that all three engine builders know that and will be very happy to trade them. Not a one of them will say, when you go to buy one, call any one of them. See if one of them will tell you that theirs is better than somebody else's. They can't be. They all get the same pieces and put them together identically. There's no difference. I'd say the reason Steve has sold so many Progressives is because he's probably a little better funded or whatever. He's always got one on the floor. If you call him up and say, I want one, he'll deliver you one.
Yeah, I think I saw like...
He'll deliver you two, you know?
10 of them up at Lakeland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know that he had 10, but he had a bunch.
He had a bunch of them.
All right, Don. I'll tell you what, we're going to have to run. We got to talk to Casey Smith, late model driver, super late model driver from... who's won a championship at Op Alabama and Mobile Speedway last year. And we're going to talk to him. But I tell you,
Don Friday at Orlando.
Yeah, we'll see Friday at Orlando.
See you Friday. I'll be there with bells on.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Bye.
Well, you call Wayne up and see what he has to say, Rick.
Yeah, okay, I'll call Wayne up and see what he has to
say. All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. We're coming back with Casey Smith, who I believe Casey's from Texas.
Yeah, Texas.
Yeah, another one of those Texas guys. We'll be right back with Casey Smith.
All right.
Holy cow.
Land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many.
You're a star.
Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie.
Shiny, shiny star.
Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
Well, that's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused, even if you're seldom in focus. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody, because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, I'm Wayne Rudiman, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
Mike wasn't working.
Oh, yeah. You're on.
There we go. Okay, so we did get clarification off the air that there was
there was no ass kicking.
There was no ass kicking by the North versus the South. People take exception with some officials from another series took exception to some of the things that Don said. We will clarify that, and we'll have more on it next week on Real Racing USA Live on Tuesday night. But right now, we're going out to Texas and talk to a young race car driver named Casey Smith, who a lot of people know. He won two championships last year in late models. Welcome to Real Racing USA Live, Casey. Help us get straightened out here. We've been talking to promoters for 2 hours. Our heads are spinning, man.
I know how that is, and I can't talk to them either. they're above me sometimes, but you got to have them in the racing world, and without them, you definitely couldn't make it to the racetrack.
They got that right. So now you're from Texas.
Yes, sir. We're from Texas, and we actually race in more on the East Coast because there's no racing for super late models in Texas. It's just pro late models. So we race majority in Alabama and some CRA races, excuse me, and such up north. Been racing since I was five, and just loving life racing late models.
Now you've been doing, you've been traveling since you started this. Your first championship was in Syracuse, New York, right?
Yes, sir. We went out to race quarter midgets. They had quarter midgets here in Texas, but the nationals were all around the country, and I had awesome parents that were selling their own business, so they were able to take off and go racing. And we raced every weekend somewhere in a quarter midget, and won my first national championship when I was 12 years old in Syracuse, New York, and I couldn't be more grateful to have the career I've had. Even though I haven't made it or anything, I've had more fun than probably anybody has racing, especially looking back on it. We were watching old racing videos this weekend, and just looking back at how much fun we had, and all the neat places we've been, all the neat people we've met, and I've been doing it longer than some people have been racing that are in Cup and stuff, so It's really neat, and I enjoy it a lot.
17 years old, you're what, 22?
Yes, sir. I'm 22 now.
So you've been racing 17 years. That's longer than a lot of drivers' complete careers. And you're really you're really hitting it right now, hitting stride.
Yeah, I think I'm finally. You know, we were really competitive and really ran up front and everything we ran. Then when I got in the late models, we were able to buy a car for Freddie Query, so we were up front, you know, right off the bat. And this new bump stuff and big bar soft springs and stuff, it's thrown a lot of people for a curve, and I've been able to be on top of this as well with Joe Scheer helping us. And just I've always been able to have, you know, good equipment and be able to run up front, and, you know, to be able to do it for as long as I've done it. It's like, you know, some people start getting burned out, and, you know, I don't know what I'd do without racing. Sitting here in the shop right now building shop.
Who was that you said that was helped you a lot?
Freddie, we bought a car for Freddie Query when I first got into late model.
Uh-huh.
And he went to work for Hank Parker Jr. In the Busch series. And then Joe Scheer.
Helped
us when we ran ASA, just consulting with us. And we really ran good at a lot of races. And without his help, we definitely couldn't have done that. And he still helps me every once in a while on the late model and keeps me up with new ideas and stuff. So you always got to have, you know, new ways of doing things that don't matter. Like last year, people tell me, you know, you won two championships. You definitely got to go there and, you know, do the same thing this year. Well, that's not the case. Everybody's been working hard all off season, and unfortunately, we went to the Rattler and had a chance to win it and destroyed a brand-new car earlier this year. So we're kind of behind the eight ball trying to get it put back together and race Pensacola and Mobile, not this coming weekend, but next weekend. So we're really looking forward to that, and hopefully getting the year off will be better than we started.
Yeah, bringing up Pensacola, you know, at 17 years old, you started 31st in the Snowball Derby and finished third, and that's quite an accomplishment right there in itself.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, I love that place. We just can't ever qualify there, but that was the first race Joe ever helped me at. And having somebody like that on the radio keeping you calm, and Pensacola, that's a place where if you just stay out of trouble and have a good long-run car, you're going to finish good. And we had it that day. And, you know, we went there this year and wrecked on lap 15 with a car chopping me off, getting in the corner, and put us in the wall. But that's just one of those races to where it's either going to be your day or not your day, and there's only going to be about two or three guys walk out of there that wants to come back, and everybody else says they're not coming back, but the next year there'll be 100 cars show up, you know. So that place is a really neat place, and love racing there, and that's a true driver's track, because 10 laps, 20 tires, you slow down a second and a half, 2 seconds, and just out there with all you got pedaling it.
Yeah, we talked to a lot of drivers that run up there, and then the three things they say is it takes a cool head, tire management, and a lot of luck.
Oh, that's absolutely, you know, you got, of course, you know, you're going to have the best drivers are always going to run up front and do good. You got Gary Santamontas won it at least two or three times, and, you know, but you know, like this year, he got caught up in the same wreck I was caught up in, and both of us kind of at the wrong place at the wrong time. We shouldn't have been back there in the back, but it's like one of those places that we qualify in the back, but usually the people that qualify back there have really good race cars. And it's just that track is one of the biggest places of luck. You know, you go to Nashville, and it's a lot the same way. You slow down a lot, and but there's a lot of racing room, and you got cars that are able to, you know, move out of your way, and you're able to stay out of people's way when they're faster than you. But Pensacola, it's like people come in for tires, and they're so much faster than other people, they just run right over them, and it's really a tough place to get through there. And usually the guy wins if the guy's had the most luck, he's probably not going to have had the best car.
How tough was it when NASCAR finally did away with the late model series for you?
Yeah, that was a tough deal. You know, what the deal was, when I turned 16, we got an all-pro car, and it was one of Freddie Query's old all-pro cars, and that was when that series was just booming. You show up and have at least 45 cars at every race, and went to the Nashville for my first race, and had Alex Query helping us, and was running third, and broke a motor, and we're geared up to run the whole series the next year, and that's in 2001 when Dale Earnhardt died. So we had to revert back to just running straight rail cars out here in Texas, and then we moved to ASA. But that was an awesome series, and really competitive, and it was a great stepping ground. And it between that and ASA, you know, shutting down, I mean, there's a lot of good series out there right now, but there's nothing like those two series were. And it's really a shame that they're not there anymore, because it was a great training ground and a great way to race and learn, you know, how to race with the best. You know, I remember racing with Mike Eddy and all of them, and it taught me more than you could learn on any race and for a whole year in just one race, just watching them and following them.
You know what? You know what, Casey? You're way too young to have all this insight, man.
All kinds of knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. I'm serious, man.
It was, you know, it was crazy. When I was little, we used to come home on Sundays from the quarter midget tracks and watch Mike Garvey, Mike Eddy, Butch Miller, all of them on ASA, and then I'm sitting there in one race, and I'm racing with all of them.
God.
And it's like, you know, this is unreal. You know, you always want to make it to NASCAR and, of course, for the money and all that, but racing with the greatest short track drivers in the world that, you know, if they would have got their chance in the same equipment some people are in, they could have definitely won just as many championships as anybody in Cup. And it's just neat knowing that you're racing with them. And it's really something to look back on and be able to say that you were able to do.
As we have been saying for a long time, you know, the best 43 drivers are not racing on Sunday. There's some of them are the best 43, but most of the best 43 aren't racing on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's a shame because right now it's all turned into who can bring the money. And it's a shame because there is a lot of good drivers out there that have earned their right, but there's a lot right now that, you know, I've raced with since I was 5 years old that just never have cut the mustard, but they're able to get the money and they have the business sent to find the money and get the ride, and that's what it takes. You know, you got to hand it to them because it's more than just driving race cars nowadays.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this, you know, too. We talk to people. There isn't a month that goes by that I don't run across somebody who tells me from North Carolina that they were happier when they were racing more at the local level and doing the smaller traveling series because the fun, the higher up that level goes, man, not for everybody, but for a lot of people, the fun isn't as much. It's not as much fun. You know, there's a lot more pressure.
Well, look at Kyle Busch when he was at
USA.
And
it's a business. It's a business.
When Kyle was running the late model at USA in January, I mean, he was in heaven as long as he was in the car and around it. As soon as it got down to being back to the NASCAR star when everybody piled around him in the autograph session, he just didn't fit that.
He didn't fit the deal.
It's a shame that it's turned into that because realistically the racing should be just as fun, but it's not because it's all about business sense. And when they get out of the race car, they got to be sure and say the right things. And when they're on the racetrack, they got to be sure and do the right things. And just like I was at a seminar this winter that Performance PR Plus put on, and they had some people on there, and they're like, you know, in fact, there's a lady that promoted Tony Stewart for a few years. She said, Tony's first few years, he wasn't home, but if he was lucky, 3 or 4 days a whole month, and he was gone on sponsorship deals constantly. But that's what it takes to make the money they're making, and that's what they get paid for. But the true racing is still late models, and everybody I talked to, from David Shimmy to, you know, Johnny Sauter, to any of them would rather race late models, but, you know, they just they got to do what they got to do and make the money.
Yeah,
but it is a shame that because it still could be just as much fun as it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Casey, how many races, when you won these two championships last year at Op Alabama and the Mobile, how many races did you run at each track, do you know?
We ran, there was a five-race series at each track, and we won five at Op and one at Mobile. And had actually some stuff break. We had a transmission break one time, and actually transmission broke twice at Mobile, and I was leading the race. So, but we definitely had good cars there. In Pensacola, we struggled, but it's really neat to be able to run anybody that's around that area watching they come and just watch, you know, come Friday night to Pensacola and Saturday night to Mobile, and you're going to see some of the best short track racing in the world. You have 30 cars show up.
Sure enough.
Lots of tracks, and it's really neat, 100-lap race, and, you know, you got some of the best people that run front of the Derby racing there.
Sure enough. And you ran, how many features did you win last year?
We won six, one at Mobile and five at Op.
Gotcha.
And Op was really good for us last year.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. Go ahead, Rick.
Casey, who's the people that are helping you out with this car?
Well, we have actually my mom and dad and a guy by the name of Gary Buchanan that owns the hauler and the engine and one car. So he's helped us out a whole lot. And other than that, we're pretty much doing it on our own. And that's why we can't run quite as many races as we'd like to. We got about 20 scheduled for this year. But we definitely like to run a little bit more. But you know how much it costs to run these days. And now it's like even late model shows, you got to be there a whole day ahead of time because everybody else is there practicing. And it starts adding up. But we've had a lot of fun. And right now I'm just having a ball racing them. And but I got to thank Gary Buchanan a lot for all he's done for us. So we wouldn't be able to be at the level we're at.
All right, Casey, next race, what, April 11th at Five Flags?
Yes, sir, April 11th and then the 12th at Mobile International Speedway.
And your website is caseysmithracing.com, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, Casey, it was a pleasure having you on the show, man. I wish you all the best of luck. And
we'll follow you. We'll follow your deal. Yeah, we'll follow your
deal
all year.
I can be back and on the show, and I love listening to it, and thanks for having me.
All right, man.
All right, Casey, anytime, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right, Casey Smith.
And we've had
22 years old, Jack.
Oh, well spoken,
good kid.
But he also had the insight. He sees things.
He
sees all this stuff. And,
right.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. It's we have went over again, and I'll tell you what. For people that didn't catch it the first time, we're looking here for our right after we're done here. You can hang out and listen to the Motor Wars show that we did a few weeks ago with McGonagall himself.
McGonagall and Steve from Progressive and Jeff Choquette. And
a lot of insights.
If you got comments on it or you got questions or you'd like to be on the show, you can go to realracingusa.com/forums, put a post there. Our email addresses are all over the website. You can do that. Rick Angie's at realracingusa.com, and we'd be glad to talk to you. And if you want to be on the show, just give us a shout.
So next week, or actually in 2 weeks,
we're
going to have Edgar Otto on.
Okay, you know, Bill France is credited with being the father of stock car racing, right? Well, I'll tell you what, Ed Otto is the grandfather of stock car racing.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Just flipped through the
book. I read
book.
That book. It was very impressive.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
Yep.
He was a promoter.
Yep.
And he was a real, in every definition, right there with P.T. Barnum and all that kind
of stuff. Yeah. The book's what? Ed Otto, NASCAR Silent Partner. What website can they get this on, Jack? What is the name
it's
of it?
It's Coastal 181.
We got links
com.
On the on
not yet, but we're going to have very soon, very soon here.
Yep.
Coastal181.com. They have a lot of racing books. That's what they do.
Yep.
That's all they do is it's all about motorsports books. But we're going to have Ed Otto was a partner with in the original setup with him and
Bill
France, and there was one other man who owned a very small interest, but. We're going to have his son,
Edgar Otto,
who wrote the book. He's 78 years old, still races a late mile himself, and that's wild enough. But
old is he?
78.
And he races a late model?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to meet these guys.
We're going
to
have him on the show and in 2 weeks, and we're going to have an extended, we're going to have most of the show is going to be about that.
Right.
It's about the history of NASCAR, stuff you never knew about, or maybe you heard about. Well, we're going to ask somebody who was there when it actually happened. So,
there you go.
So I think we're out of here, man. Real All Racing right. USA Live.
Live as always. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight, and we will see you next Tuesday night.
Stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned for Motor Wars right after.
Stay tuned for Motor Wars. Good night now.